A logo appears in bold, slanting letters over a green planet in space. Turner. Now a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now under a sunny blue sky, a short, stocky man in his 20s strolls down a country road. Titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents National Velvet, a Clarence Brown production, copyright 1944, based on the novel National Velvet by Enid Bagnold, starring Mickey Rooney as Mai Taylor, with Donald Crisp as Mr. Brown, Elizabeth Taylor as Velvet Brown, Anne Revere as Mrs. Brown, Angela Lansbury as Edwina Brown, Jackie Jenkins as Donald Brown, and Arthur Treacher as the race patron. Produced by Pandro S. Berman. Screenplay by Theodore Reeves and Helen Deutsch. Photographed in Technicolor. Director of Photography, Leonard Smith, ASC. Musical score, Herbert Stothard. Art direction, Cedric Gibbons and Yuri McClary. Costume supervision, Irene. Men's wardrobe, valets. Film editor, Robert J. Kern. Also with Juanita Quigley, Reginald Owen, Norma Varden, Terry Kilburn, Arthur Shields, Aubrey Mather, Alec Craig, Eugene Loring, Dennis Hoey, Matthew Bolton, and Gerald Oliver Smith. Directed by Clarence Brown. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Samantha Manahan, read by Wendy Sacchichini, funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Words appear. England in the late 1920s, a long time ago in a spinning world. With a knapsack on his back, the wayfarer stops at a crossroads. He wears a tweed cap, knickers, and a cotton shirt with the sleeves rolled above his elbows. To his right, green meadows slope gently down to the sea. Across the bay, puffy white clouds hang low over a string of rolling hills. He reads a road sign, Sewell's, 1 mile, then sits and wipes the sweat from his brow. In town, young boys enthusiastically leave school. In a classroom, girls stand at their desks and sing to their teacher. Velvet Brown, a doll-faced 12-year-old with long, curly brown hair, sparkling blue eyes, and a retainer, glimpses several boys making faces in the window. The other girls notice.
All of you have been sweet and good, and I hope you have the loveliest of holidays.
Goodbye, Miss Sims.
Goodbye, Jane.
Goodbye, Miss Sims.
Oh, happy holiday, Helen. And thank you all for these lovely gifts. Oh, these flowers. They're Jennifer's, aren't they? Thank you, dear. And the pears? Those are from the Brown girls. Thank you, Malvolia.
A beautiful holiday, Miss Sims.
Thank you, dear. And you, Edwina?
Happy holiday.
Nail polish?
Oh, I only put it on this morning. She's meeting a boy, Miss Sims.
Oh, does your mother know?
Not yet, Miss Sims, but she will. Goodbye, Miss Sims.
Goodbye, Velvet, and thank you.
Oh, don't thank me for anything. I ate my pear. I forgot.
Well, it was a kind thought anyway, Velvet.
She's absent-minded. She's always dreaming.
I know. What do you dream about hour after hour?
Things.
Why don't you follow your sister Mary's example? Look, even on the last day of school, she's brought her grandma.
Oh, don't move! My canary! Don't
Velvet get... helps Malvolia pick up her paper canaries.
I'll miss the Brown girls.
The Browns head outside.
You had no right to. I'm so furious I could shake you.
But, Dwina, I only wanted to explain about the polish.
So you told Miss Sims I was meeting a boy. It's a wonder you didn't tell her who and where.
I didn't know where.
Later, they stroll through town smiling.
I'll like crunchies, huh? My treat.
No, thanks.
I could slip my plate out a minute.
Put it back, Velvet. Your teeth will never straighten if you keep pushing it in and out all the time.
Hello, Mr. Hallam.
No more antique.
He stands smugly in the doorway of his candy shop. Malvolia shows him a coin, and he grins.
Take my books home.
Well, thank you.
Frowning, Malvolia takes their books.
You know, man is thoughtless.
Edwina puts her arm around her younger sister, then turns up her nose at a handsome boy who rings his bicycle bell. Velvet glances back at his frown.
That was Ted, wasn't it? Aren't you meeting him?
At the spinney at 4 o'clock.
But you didn't even say hello. It's public. Undignified.
Strange. Not dignified to be polite when you're in love.
Velvet, you're too young to understand some things. Have you ever really felt keen about anything?
Oh, yes. Horses.
What does it feel like to be in love with a horse?
I lose my lunch.
You're a child. Here's where you feel it.
She covers her heart.
It skips a beat.
Ted rides past.
See you at supper.
Edwina grins and follows Ted. Warmed by the bright sun, Velvet skips onto a wooden bridge, then stops to pick a reed from the stream. An excited smile lights up her freckled face.
Come on now!
Using the reed as a crop, she taps it against her leg as she trots down a dirt road by the sea. Wearing a red dress, white stockings, and black shoes, she gallops up to the crossroads where the short wayfarer sits. Velvet stops.
I wouldn't be cantering that horse uphill.
I don't usually. I was hurrying.
Hurrying? Where to?
No place, just hurrying.
Should be in school, shouldn't you?
Summer holiday started today. Where should you be?
Any place my feet take me. Is that Sewell's over there?
Mm-hmm. That where you're going?
Mm-hmm.
I live there. My father's the butcher.
That's nice.
I have two sisters and a brother.
That makes it chummy.
What you got?
The whole world. My pa left it to me, all of it.
He pulls a cracker from his vest pocket and takes a bite. Velvet gazes softly at him.
Hungry?
His face hardens.
Did I ask you for anything?
Velvet slowly shakes her lowered head. Softening his gaze, he offers her the cracker.
No, thank you.
Didn't mean to be rough with you, but a fella gets tired of people being sorry for him. He gets not to like it.
They spot a man chasing a horse across a field. From behind a stone fence, Velvet admires the lean chestnut thoroughbred with four white-socked legs. A snow-white blaze stripes its face. As it gallops gracefully across the moor, Velvet lays a hand over her heart.
I could win a sit. It skipped a beat instead of losing lunch.
You're feeling all right.
Isn't he beautiful? He's new. I've never seen him before.
Yeah, he's got lots of vinegar, I'll grant you. About 15-2, more near 16 hands, I'd say. He's got speed. Short back, well-ribbed up. He's a nice mover, all right.
The horse easily jumps the 3-foot stone wall, then heads down the road toward them.
He's loose!
He made it! Did you see him take that fence?
She runs into the road.
Come back! You get trampled on!
Velvet fearlessly waves her arms. The horse rears. Then stand still.
There, what a lovely boy he is.
The owner runs up.
Oh, you're a sweet one.
You're a pretty one, Velvet.
What's his name, Mr. Reed?
Name?
He halters his horse.
He's a murderous pirate. Not deserving of a name.
Oh, no, not pirate. He's a gentle one. I'll just call him Pie. Oh, you're a pretty one, Pie. You didn't mean to run away.
You're a wizard, Velvet.
May I ride him, Mr. Reed?
Ride this horse?
Oh, please, let me ride him.
Not this horse, you don't. He's wild as a hare. And what's a lad doing, letting a girl throw herself in front of a horse?
But he did try to stop me, Mr. Reed.
Not too hard. Friend of yours, Velvet?
We both think your horse is beautiful, Mr. Reed. Where did you get him?
Bought him cheap at Barnet Fair, but he's got a devil in him. Tramping the roads, my lad.
And if I am, England's a free country.
Free, is it? Well, you better day tour around Sewell's. That's a piece of free advice. Our constable don't like odd characters.
But he's a friend, Mr. Reed, and he knows all about horses, and he's coming home for supper.
Velvet, your father won't like it.
I have business in Sewell's.
No doubt.
The wayfarer shows him his address book.
Mrs. Herbert Brown. That's very interesting.
Nighttime at the Browns' dinner table. The wayfarer sits between Velvet and an empty chair. Malvolia sits next to her thinly haired father, who reads the paper. His wife, lean with a smooth, ruddy complexion, flips through the visitor's address book. Her 5-year-old son, red-haired and freckled-faced, eats beside her. Mrs. Brown keenly eyes her guest.
You say this was your father's address book? Yes, ma'am. I found it among his belongings. His name was Dan Taylor.
She sets his book next to her plate.
You wash your neck, Velvet?
Yes, Mother.
Soaking. Next time, unbutton your collar.
Mr. Taylor, what do you think of Poon's finished mixture for canaries?
Oh, Mally, he doesn't know anything about canaries.
How do you know?
Do you know anything about canaries, boy?
No, sir.
That's settled.
I'll sick all night.
With his mouth full, Velvet's brother glances around the table.
I'll sick all night.
Go on, go on.
I am going on.
You're just rolling it round and round. Now swallow.
Can't. Isn't farty.
Chewing, he holds up a glass bottle of bugs.
Isn't he lovely? He collects insects.
Mrs. Brown, must he wear that bottle to the table?
Donald wears the bug jar like a necklace. His mother hangs it down his back. Meanwhile, a brown, shaggy-furred terrier puts his front paws on Taylor's legs, sits, and perks its ears.
Young man, there's a very strict rule about feeding Jacob at table.
I'm sorry.
Makes a beggar out of him. Where's Edwina?
Meeting that boy. Don't tease her when she comes in.
Strawberry blonde Edwina enters.
So sorry for late.
Where's light? Where's light?
Edwina, this is my tailor. I found him on the Brighton Road. Don't look so shocked, Edwina. He was coming to see Mother anyway.
Mrs. Brown discreetly feeds the dog.
Dwayne's late now, is sick all night.
That's a lie, Donald. You weren't sick.
I could have been sick if I wanted to.
Donald, you told a story, didn't you?
Yes, it was a story.
Well, you know what a story is.
What is it?
Say you're sorry.
Donald rests his chin on his hand in thought.
Well?
He's thinking.
Well, make up your mind.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Donald takes a bite.
Well, go on. Sorry for what?
For being sick all night.
A child will make a lawyer.
As Jacob sits up on his back legs, Malvolia slips him a treat. Velvet glances warily around, then takes out her retainer.
Velvet, put that back.
It aches me when I eat. It's a devil plate.
Ache or no, that plate costs £4.10, and it's solid gold. How many times must I tell you girls that you have only your faces for your fortunes? Do you want to have a face like a rabbit?
She'd rather have a face like a horse.
Enough, Mally.
Edwina feeds Jacob.
Now then, you'd something to tell me about your father.
Mai stops eating and shifts in his chair.
You said that you knew him.
I didn't say anything. You said you had things to talk about.
You must have known him. Why should he have your name in his address book?
I thought you were going to answer that.
Well, to tell you the strict truth, ma'am, I can't. You see, I found the book among my father's belongings after he died. And, I thought that since I was passing through Sewell's today, that you, being an old friend of his, that, maybe you could,
Mai lowers his gaze uncomfortably. Mrs. Brown offers him a serving of baked pudding.
No, thank you. I think I'd better be running along before it gets too dark.
Dark? Forgot to cover the canary.
Malvolia, you forgot something else, too.
She clasps her hands in prayer. She rushes upstairs.
Mally and her birds.
Well.
Must you go?
Yes, I'm afraid I must.
Where will you go?
If you stay on the road, you're sure to find another town.
Velvet's eyes shift thoughtfully.
Father, how are you feeling? You don't look well at all.
I never felt fitter in my life.
But you don't really look well, Father. Don't you need a helper in the shop just for the summer? There's more sheep come to market in summer than winter.
There may be something in what you say, Velvet. It's quite true there are more sheep come to market in summer than in winter. But however it may grieve you, I feel fine.
Velvet and Mai look down in disappointment. Then Mai gets up from the table.
No reason why you should go on in the dark, Mr. Brown. There's that small bed in the stable you could have for tonight. You'll find a blanket, too.
Velvet beams excitedly as Mai sits back down. Mrs. Brown shoots her husband an inflexible look, then offers Mai some baked pudding. Mr. Brown opens his paper.
It's coming.
castle pudding, Mai.
Velvet passes him the sauce. Her crescent eyes widen in shock as she catches her father feeding the dog.
Father!
Huh? What?
Flustered, he hastily puts on his glasses and picks up his paper. Outside, Edwina stares dreamily into Ted's eyes.
Good night, Ted.
Night, Edwina.
As she turns to go, Ted holds her hand and pulls her back to him.
Well, good night.
Ted pumps a few nervous breaths, then quickly pecks her cheek and scurries off. Edwina holds the kiss on her cheek as she steps lightly toward the house. As though walking on air, she pushes the front door open, glides past her mother, and heads upstairs. At the kitchen table, Mrs. Brown smiles after her, then writes in a ledger. Eyeing his wife, Mr. Brown points upstairs with a mystified look.
Boys.
Well.
She's the age for it. Don't say anything to her.
I don't fancy you working at night, Mrs. Brown.
He closes the front door.
Let it go till morning. You look tired.
Oh, I'm well enough. It's you must conserve yourself, Mr. Brown. After all, there is more sheep coming to market summer than winter.
Now you know there's small sense in hiring that boy, Mrs. Brown.
Hiring? Never crossed my mind. But you could do worse.
7 and 6 a week to make a few deliveries and
sweep. 10 bob would be more fair. The boy must clothe himself and save a little.
10 bob? What for? Because he's the son of Dan Taylor? Did you ever hear me ask a favor of any man because I'm the son of my father?
He won't get special favor, Mr. Brown.
Oh, I'll see that he earns his 10 bob, Mrs. Brown. Never fear.
She smiles faintly.
See the girls get to bed, would you, Mr. Brown? I am a little tired.
All right.
She picks up a handful of coins and some bills, then bites a slice of apple off his knife and heads into the pantry. Glass jars of preserves line the shelves of a tall cupboard. Munching the apple, she takes a pewter coffee pot down from the top shelf, puts the money inside, then replaces the pot. Outside, Mai watches through the window with a sly grin. Upstairs in the girls' room, Velvet sits up in her twin bed with strings looped around each of her big toes. Wearing checked pajamas, she holds the string reins and pedals her legs. Malvolia covers her canary cage, ready for bed in a white nightgown. Edwina wears a soft floral dress and stares dreamily into space.
Whoa!
She hurries under the covers, pulls the patchwork quilt up to her neck, and pretends she's asleep. Velvet's legs churn as her father enters, puffing a pipe.
You're an odd one, Velvet.
This is my driving now. I'm only allowed on Fridays. I've got 2 minutes more driving. Come on, Pi. Gallop.
She pumps her legs together.
What's that covering, Mally?
Edwina's knickers that she had for the party.
That don't look like knickers.
Blushing, he realizes it's underwear, then notices Jacob eyeing the cage and licking his lips.
You see? I always thought Jacob had a little bird dug in him.
He'd better not, Father. Get down, Jacob.
The little terrier hops onto Velvet's bed and wags his tail. Mr. Brown watches Edwina, who lies peacefully with her eyes closed.
It's wonderful how Edwina can sleep through all this bedlam.
Velvet slows her peddling legs, then pats her knee.
Easy now, Pi. Oh, you're a sweet one, Pi.
What is this pie business? A new one?
Father, he's the loveliest thing. You should see him. He never puts a foot wrong.
Who?
Mr. Eade's new horse. I'm in love with him.
You're a fickle woman. I heard you say that about other horses.
But this is a real thing, Father.
Yes, now calm yourself. You'll be losing your supper next.
But this is really different, Father. It just skips a beat here. Like Edwina.
Edwina skips a beat?
For boys.
Oh, for boys.
With her eyes closed, Edwina clenches her lips.
Come on, Jacob. I must take you for a walk.
He blows out the oil lamp.
Sleep, girls. Mother won't be in.
Why not?
Just tired.
He opens the door and looks back.
Edwina, you'd better take your clothes off.
Eyes wide, Edwina pops up in bed as her father closes the door and leaves. Velvet carefully cracks it open and peeks out.
That's the last time I take you into my confidence, Velvet Brown.
Velvet tiptoes across the hall and quietly opens her mother's bedroom door.
May I come in, Mother?
Yes?
Mrs. Brown sits before a mirror, braiding her hip-length brown hair.
Are you angry, Mother? I had to come.
Of course I'm not angry.
Velvet lies in her mother's twin bed.
It's disturbing you, Velvet. You're all lighted up.
She gently stops Velvet from taking out her retainer.
Mother, did you know my tailor's father? Perhaps when you were a swimmer, when you were having your pictures in the paper and all that. Way back, I mean.
Way back.
Smiling, she takes Velvet's hand.
You know how I came to swim the channel and have my picture in the paper and all that? It was my tailor's father showed me how.
My tailor's father?
He was my trainer. Because he told me what to do, worked with me for months. Followed me in the boat. Leaned over and fed me. Breathed the spirit into me. Made me do it when I was ready to give up.
Why didn't you tell Mai about his father?
It wasn't the time for it. There's a right time for everything.
But he'd be so happy, Mother. It would give him something to go on with.
He needn't go. He can stay. 10 bob a week in his keep.
Oh, Mother.
Velvet hugs her.
Not charity. He'll work his way.
I know he will. Mother, may I go and tell him?
Tell him he can stay, but no more. We'll not let him trade on his father's name. If the stuff is there, it'll show.
Yes, Mother.
Grinning eagerly, Velvet leaves. Later, in a simply furnished stable room, Mai counts out cash on the bed.
Mai!
He hurriedly stuffs the cash in his pockets.
You still up?
Yes, I'm still up. Come in.
Wearing a heavy beige robe and slippers, Velvet enters and sits on a crate.
I know something, Mai.
He shifts his gaze.
You do?
You can stay. Not just for tonight. Mother's managed it. 10 bob a week in your food and keep. They're helping Father. Isn't it wonderful, Mai? The room may look a little shabby, but you'll find it very comfortable. Really, you will.
Her foot breaks through the floor.
The floor does that in places. But the bed's good.
Mai nervously watches Velvet feel the thin, ticking mattress. Smoothing out the wrinkles, she finds a silver coin.
This yours?
Mai hesitates, then takes it.
Yes, thank you.
You can fix it up bit by bit in your spare time. You can paint it, perhaps.
She opens a wooden transom, revealing a window into the barn.
Raise this and get a nice breeze. And in the winter, you can put it down again. You can have a little stove, too.
I haven't said I was staying.
Oh.
Her smile fades.
I'm considering.
Considering? Don't you know if he'd be happy?
It isn't the happiness of it I'm considering. It's what it'll get me and where. You see, it's for the lack of considering that people stay poor. Have you ever been quiet for a few hours and just think?
Her fanciful eyes grow wide.
All the time. All the time about horses. All day and every night. I want to be a famous rider. I should like to hunt. Ride to hounds. I should like to race. I should like to have so many horses that I could walk down between the loose boxes and ride what I choose.
Mai lays a hand on her forehead, checking her temperature.
Do you feel all right?
She shyly looks up.
Oh. That's Miss Ada.
Who?
Miss Ada. She pulls the cart. Meet again?
She leads him to Miss Ada, a stocky horse with a thick white coat.
She's a little old and tired. We love her. Don't you love horses?
I hate them.
I don't believe it. You know too much about them.
That's when you really hate something, when you know too much about it.
Perhaps you're just scared by horses. You will stay, won't you, Mai?
He glances toward the house, then nods slightly, his face pale blue in the moonlight.
Yes, I'll stay. Perhaps it's smarter.
Oh, I'm sure it is. You better get to bed then. Father leaves for the shop early.
I think she wants another carrot.
One is her usual.
No, she wants another. If we don't give it to her, she's liable to snuffle and whinny all night. I'll get it myself.
Velvet nuzzles Miss Ada's soft forelock.
See, Miss Ada? He's ashamed to admit he likes you.
Meanwhile, Mai warily checks over his shoulder as he hurries through the back door into the pantry, carrying a change purse. He takes the pewter coffee pot down from the top shelf of the cupboard,
stuffs the cash from his pocket into the purse, and puts the stolen money back in the pot. Smiling toward the stable, he returns the silver coin from his pocket, then quietly replaces the coffee pot. He grabs a carrot from a vegetable bin, jogs back to the stable, and hands Velvet Miss Ada's treat.
Hey,
Oh, no, you give it to her yourself.
He shoves the carrot into her hand.
Here.
Mai leans against the barn doorway and stares up at the night sky. Velvet feeds Miss Ada the carrot, then joins him.
Mai, why be ashamed of your feelings? If you like Miss Ada, well, why pretend you don't?
Because I told you I hated horses.
You'll have to get over that, Mai.
Why?
Because I love them so. Every day I pray to God to give me horses. Wonderful horses. To let me be the best rider in England.
Daytime. Velvet drives a cart pulled by Miss Ada into town. Her terrier, Jacob, sits on the seat beside her. Velvet parks in front of her family's butcher shop, heads inside, and smiles at a leaving customer.
Hello, Velvet.
Morning, Miss Velvet. I brought Miss Ada, Mother.
Good.
Miss Ada here?
Boy, come, lad.
Mai steps out of the cold room and hangs up his slimy leather apron.
Just loose the runway.
I have an order for Mrs. Eve. Velvet's brought the cart. You know where the Eve farm is? Up past Table Gully, right close by the seawall.
Father, I'll show him the way.
Nonsense. He must learn by himself.
Please let me, Father. You can get lost on those hullocks. There's the road to Eads and the road to Tupper's. It's terribly confusing, Father.
Ride'll do her good. Sharpen her appetite.
Yes, it will, Father. Sharpen my appetite. Come on, Mai.
Velvet grabs a package of meat and dashes outside. Mai shakes his head at Mr. Brown, then climbs onto the driver's seat beside Velvet and takes the reins. The Browns watch them drive off.
Mrs. Brown, I've been thinking. Now, mind you, I'm not against this tailor lad.
But not for him.
Well, you'll allow that tramping the road's not a proper upbringing for a lad. Would you guarantee there wasn't a bit of lying and sharp dealing about him?
I guarantee there was. But what's the meaning of goodness if there isn't a little badness to overcome?
Her lips curve into a firm smile, and Mr. Brown affectionately pinches her cheek. On the coastal dirt road, Mai and Velvet drive through Mr. Eade's rolling pasture land with Jacob between them. Wearing a yellow smock dress, Velvet shields the sun from her eyes as she watches Pi graze near a quiet cove. Behind him, the rich blue sea stretches endlessly to the horizon.
That's what I figured. Thought I'd lose my way, huh?
Oh, you could. You're a stranger.
Not to the ways of a woman.
Mai, am I deceitful?
Why didn't you say you wanted to come out here to make a call on a horse?
Mai, what have horses ever done to you?
Nothing.
But there's got to be a reason.
All right, so I took a spill once. You'd hate him, too, without reason if you had any sense. What's a horse? An animal that earns his keep by breaking his back. I'm a horse, and I'll be one till I use my head again.
Again?
Looking away, Velvet sighs. Her face brightens as she watches Pi rear up and playfully toss his head. His white blaze glows in the bright sunshine. Mai tugs on Miss Ada's reins and stops the cart.
Thank you, Mai.
Velvet hops down and watches Pi from the 3-foot-tall stone wall. Tiny Jacob tears across the field toward Pi, and the lean horse breaks into a gallop. In the cart, Mai leaps to his feet.
Jacob, come back here!
Velvet runs along the fence.
Velvet!
Pi, wait for
that ball! Pi gallops toward the fence, then springs into the air with his forelegs bent and easily clears the stone wall. His chestnut mane bounces as he takes off down the dirt road toward town. Standing up in the cart, Mai gapes.
He didn't do it. I don't believe it. Must be something wrong with my eyes.
Mai scratches his head in disbelief, then anxiously unties the string from the package of meat and jumps to the ground. Velvet follows him down the wall.
Mai, he'll trample someone in the village.
Mai stops where Pi cleared the stone wall in a ditch. Holding 2 feet of string taut, he measures the height of the wall and the sloping ground.
He didn't. But maybe he did. We'll be generous. We'll say that this is 2 feet. Would you say that's 2 feet? Maybe it's a little bit more. We'll call it 2 anyway.
Mai measures 6 feet, then looks at Velvet awestruck.
You know what that crazy horse did?
She shakes her head.
He leaped Beecher's Brook.
He did? What
speeches, Brooke.
Mai tugs a mutton chop from Jacob's mouth.
Jacob, leave that meat alone. Leave that meat alone, Jacob. Give me a hand with these, Velvet. Take them down by the gully and wash them off. Might give them more flavor.
Mai, what speeches, Brooke, that the pie leaked?
Mai looks up at Velvet, and his wide, excited grin fades.
Forget it. Forget it. It never happened at all. Nice way to deliver meat. Come on, Jacob. Come on.
Carrying the bundle of dusty chops, Mai climbs into the cart next to Velvet and Jacob. Meanwhile, Pi races past townspeople on the cobblestone streets, then jumps a high brick wall. Later, Mr. Eads stands amid a shattered garden trellis, holding Pi, who munches some flowers. A constable jots down notes.
Done this week, your animals cut loose, Mr. Eads.
Aye.
You'll have to make restitution, no doubt. Now, let's see. There's Mr. Ildale's begonias.
Frowning, Mr. Eads glances around.
No, but here we have two seed frames measuring about 5 by 10 feet.
Aye.
But, however, that doesn't absolve the jeopardy to life and limb or safety to traffic on the King's Highway occasioned by this horse. You are the responsible party, Mr. Reed, because you're the rightful owner.
Not for long.
Later, Mrs. Brown stops outside her butcher shop to read a sign in the window. For disposal by raffle, Mr. Eads gelding. Tickets 1 shilling. Tell your friends. Cracking a smile, she shakes her head and heads inside where her husband slices meat.
You've been busy in my absence.
Well, I see no great harm in it, Mrs. Brown.
This is a butcher shop, not an auction room, Mr. Brown.
Well, Mr. Eads came in and asked for it as a special favor. Now, how could we refuse him?
We? Mr. Brown, in every sound partnership, one does the work and the other the refusing.
Well, you shouldn't have left me alone so long.
Smirking, she sits at her desk. Outside, Velvet and Mai pull up in the cart and climb down. Velvet glimpses the raffle sign and slips her retainer out of her mouth.
The pie! It's the pie! They're raffling it!
Put your bands back in. Your father's watching.
Velvet rereads the sign and slides in her retainer. Evening. Pouring himself a stout, Mr. Brown inhales deeply as Malvolio puts a loaf of bread on the set table.
Bread. Best smell on earth.
Little Donald frowns.
A stinking ant just stung me!
Velvet carries in a roast.
Father, is it true Mr. Eads gelding could be won for a shilling?
Well, if you won, you'd lose. What good is the brute? We'd have to feed him and lodge him and pay for all the damage he does.
The family sits at the table.
Father, do take us some tickets, won't you?
Didn't you hear what I said?
But, Father, you don't understand.
Sit down, Velvet. The food will get cold.
Donald studies his bug jar.
I say a stinger ant just stung me.
The child, you going to keep that up all day?
Where did it sting you?
On my thumb.
Malvolio checks it.
Not a mark. Besides, ants don't sting. They bite. Eat, Velvet.
Velvet glumly picks up her fork. Beside her, Mai stands and drops a coin in front of each of the children.
What's all this?
For raffle tickets, one for each of the girls and one for Donald.
Boy, are you challenging my authority in this family?
No, sir. I'm buying raffle tickets. You'll have to pick your own numbers, girls. They're nearly all open.
Mr. Brown looks sternly at his daughters. Edwina glances uncertainly around the table. Velvet looks at her sisters, fingering her shilling. Her father looks firmly at Malvolia and cocks an eyebrow.
I don't want a ticket.
Mai's face sags with disappointment. Suddenly, Velvet beams with excitement.
Mai, you're wonderful. I'll take 62.
Her father raises his knife in opposition.
Me, 119. It's on my brain in letters of fire.
Oh, you're sweet, Mai. I'll have 10.
I'll have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 11.
We'll get the tickets out to dinner and pin them in the Bible.
Mr. Brown taps his hand restlessly.
Boy, it's one thing to outthink a man, but another to outsmart him.
And who will say which is which?
Mr. Brown furrows his brow in concession. Daytime. The townspeople gather outside the Brown's butcher shop, where Pi is tied to a tree. In the back of the crowd, Velvet stands tippy-toe, cranes her neck to see, then weaves closer through the villagers. A beak-nosed man wearing spectacles and a bowling hat grabs her arm.
Well, little Velvet Brown.
Hello, Mr. Adam.
Velvet, I hear you've been saying that you're going to win the raffle, are you?
Oh, of course I'm to win.
Ah, you know. And what's the lucky number?
62.
Is your father promise? I can keep a secret, Velvet.
Oh, I promise myself.
Number 62 is bound to come up, isn't it? There's ways of arranging it. And your father's a clever man, eh?
Oh, I didn't bother him, Mr. Hallam. I just arranged it with God.
Velvet joins her family up front. Her father stands with Mr. Eads, who holds a bowl full of raffle tickets.
I'll not waste your time with talk. We're all gathered, and I'll ask my friend Mr. Brown to reach in his hand and determine who's to take home that handsome gelding for the price of a shilling.
Because the winning number doesn't stick to Mr. Brown's fingers.
What's that you imply, Mr. Hallam?
I imply nothing. Only there's some here that feel that the horse is now in the hands of the Brown family, and that's where he'll stay.
Aye.
Williams, you've said as much.
Brown, your daughter Velvet's been whistling up and down the village. The horse is as good as hers.
Vel's a pastime. The casting of mud on the name of an honest man.
Never mind.
Mr. Brown reaches into the crowd, yanks Mr. Hallam through the open shop window, then roughly pushes him over to Mr. Eads.
Now you'll pick the ticket out yourself.
Brown, you can't make...
I can break your head.
Look lively.
Go on, Ginger.
Mr. Eads shakes the bowl. With their fingers crossed, the Brown girls wait in the first row, their eyes wide with anticipation. Donald tries to cross his fingers like his sister's. Mr. Hallam draws a raffle ticket.
Well, sing it up.
Velvet holds her breath.
The winning number...
She trembles hopefully.
...is 113.
Mine's 119.
Closing her eyes, Velvet releases a quivering breath. Her mother escorts her through the crowd. Later, Velvet sits in the bay window while Mai and her mother wrap a blanket around her legs. Donald stares at his sister.
Velvet's teeth go.
Take him out, will you, Mai?
Mai hoists young Donald over his shoulder and carries him into the kitchen. Mrs. Brown gently tucks her daughter in.
Mother, I'm sorry.
A cup of tea will fix you up.
Anyway, I didn't faint, Mother.
Thank you, dear.
She leaves, and Velvet gazes dreamily out the window.
Sometimes it frightens me. I see things. I see things as big as life and think they're real. At this moment, I can see plain as day. The whole village coming here, bringing me the pie. I suppose it's because I want him so much.
Don't fret. If you see things that way, you'll grow up to be a poet or a prophet.
Out the window, Mrs. Brown and Mai glimpse the villagers walking Pie toward the house.
Velvet, they are bringing you the pie.
Velvet's wide blue eyes brim with joy. She stands staring out the window, then closes her eyes, smiles, and faints into Mai's arms. Later, Velvet lies unconscious in bed with a damp cloth on her forehead. Her father smiles over her. Mai gently slaps her wrist while her mother waves smelling salts under her nose. Velvet wakes.
Is it true? The pie is mine?
He's yours. Mr. Hallam drew a number that hadn't been sold, so we had to start all over again. Hallam's hand went into the bowl, and out it came with 62, your number.
Fate.
The very number Hallam said I was going to pick. The old fool was fit to die. You should have seen the expression on his face.
Better sleep now. You're all lighted up.
Mrs. Brown gently pushes her husband toward the door.
Well, I don't know why I'm so pleased. The joke's on me. I'm saddled with a crazy horse I don't need.
He presses his lips in a frown.
If there isn't enough trouble in the world, you people arrange to draw it out of a hat.
The Browns leave.
Mai.
Mai stays and Velvet eagerly sits up.
I've something to ask you.
What?
What's Bleacher's Brook that the pie leaped over?
Bleacher's Brook is the sixth jump of the Grand National, the greatest horse race in the world.
That's what you measured with the string off the mutton chops?
It's not over floating around. Just lie down there. Your mom'll blame me.
Mai, would you do something for me?
What?
Just walk the pie up and down under the windows.
What, and have you crawl out of bed and faint again?
Cross my heart. I'll just shut my eyes and listen.
Mai agrees with a wink, then heads outside. Later, he leads Pie out of the barn and smiles up at Velvet's window. Holding a 6-foot lunge rope, he wags a short crop several feet from Pie's powerful hindquarters and prods him into a trot. Pie steps lightly in a neat circle. In her bed, Velvet lies on her back, holds her damp cloth like reins, and pumps her arms and legs in rhythm as though riding at a gallop.
Come on, Pie. Faster. Oh, you're a sweet one, Pie. Now then, here's a jump. Easy. There. Oh, well done, Pie. Come on. Faster. Come on now. Faster. Faster.
daytime. Velvet rides Pie at a gallop along the edge of a seaside cliff. His smooth chestnut coat glistens in the bright sun. Behind them, the rocky shoreline foams white with the crashing surf. Forward in the saddle, she rocks with the rhythm of his thundering hooves as they race across an open field dotted with yellow dandelions. Up ahead, steep-walled cliffs interrupt the rolling green meadows and drop abruptly to the sea. Velvet reins Pie up a shrub-grown hill toward a three-rail wooden fence. He soars over, then speeds down the dirt road as Mai rides by in Miss Ada's cart. Velvet slows Pie to a trot beside him.
Mai's like riding a fairy horse. Who knows what you want before you know yourself? When he takes a jump, he kind of gives a second hitch and tucks his feet up under him, so he's only a body without legs. You just have to sit on him. Wait till you see.
I see that the horse is tired and his coat's shiny from sweat and he needs water. You probably had him over six counties since morning. Your pa wants you home for lunch.
Watch.
Off like a shot, Velvet gallops toward a four-foot-tall hedgerow.
Velvet, no!
Pie cleanly leaps the bushes, picks up speed across a field, then soars over another hedgerow. Watching from the cart, Mai tugs a handkerchief out of his back pocket and wipes the sweat from his brow. In town, Mr. and Mrs. Brown leave the shop carrying parcels.
It's in the bag, Mr. Brown. Seems you're a bit afraid of it.
It's odd a man should be afraid of his own dinner.
He pulls out a lobster.
Sure that's enough for dinner, Mr. Brown?
Oh, sure, generous. Two big claws, you and me adults. Donald can scoop in the tail. Child just fiddles anyhow. And the middle part for the girls with a crumb or two for Jacob.
And Mai?
Huh?
You can't quite accept him in the family, can you, Mr. Brown?
Oh, it's not that. Ow! Ow!
The lobster claws his finger. Wincing, Mr. Brown shakes it off.
Treacherous beast bit me.
He licks his pinched finger, then carefully puts the lobster back in the bag.
Mrs. Brown, that's the first time I ever got into trouble listening to you.
At home, Edwina paints Donald's toenails fire engine red, while Malvolia reads from a magazine.
He crossed the room in determined strides and stood there looking down at her.
I want my insect bottle.
Shut up and stop being disgusting.
He did not speak for a moment, but his face softened. Oh, Gwendolyn, he whispered, forgive me.
It's in the cupboard. Somebody will use it.
Mr. Brown eyes Donald's painted toenails.
Well, what kind of savagery is this?
Paint.
Only in fun, Father. We thought it would look pretty.
I don't like it. I want my insect bottle. Duina hit it.
The child doesn't like it. Wipe it off.
I don't mind it.
Mr. Brown quizzically furrows his brow at his wife.
What does the child mean? First he says he doesn't like it, then he says he doesn't mind it.
You take the saddle, Mai. I'll cool him off.
Mr. Brown glimpses his daughter out the open window, then steps outside. Mai carries the leather English saddle to the barn, and Velvet leads Pie down the dirt drive. His chestnut coat shines with sweat.
Where are you taking him, Velvet?
Whoa, water and rub down, Father.
And good oats and good grain, buckets of them. My girl, if your show horse wants to eat, he must work. There's an order you'll take to Meads before lunch.
But Father, he does work. Jumping, racing, and leaping. Isn't it a good job of horse just to be beautiful?
Boy, harness Prince Charming to the cart, will you?
Mai walks Pie over to the cart, and Mr. Brown turns Velvet to meet his stern gaze.
A horse that consumes oats must pull his weight in the home. Velvet, you're worse than Donald. It's a matter of economics, a science of which you know nothing due to your youth. But in a way of speaking, it's a matter of decency.
Inside, Donald climbs up the cupboard to reach the top shelf.
Donald, will you get down out there?
I want my insect bottle!
Outside, Pie rears up in the cart harness.
Pie, he'll bolt!
I'll teach him to bolt!
Whoa, Pie! Whoa!
Tearing the lead from Mr. Brown's hands, Pie bolts down the drive, crashes the cart into a stone wall, and breaks free.
He'll stop somewhere, Father. I'll catch him.
Velvet springs onto Miss Ada and gallops bareback after Pie. Mr. Brown scowls at Mai.
If you hadn't defied my authority and bought those tickets, we wouldn't have a broken cart.
Mr. Brown strides into the pantry to find Donald on the cupboard, reaching behind the preserves on the top shelf.
Donald!
Oh, you got it! It's jam! I told you not to put his insect bottle up there. Oh, I cut myself.
Donald squats in the jam to pick up his bug jar.
I only wanted my bottle, but Papa Ann's dead.
I'll have you know that it's both wasteful and sinful to destroy good foodstuffs. You had no call to take the child's bottle. I hope it'll teach us a lesson not to meddle.
If we learned the lesson a little sooner, we'd still have a card.
Mr. Brown plants his hands on his hips. Nighttime. In his room, Mai sweeps dust into the foot-sized hole in the middle of his floor. Behind him, Pai's white-striped head pokes out of a stall. Velvet slips her horse a treat. A burgundy ribbon holds back her curly brown hair.
Did your Pa calm down yet?
He's furious. He won't speak to anyone. He's gone to bed. Mai, I'm frightened. Father said he'd send the pie to the knacker shed for cat's meat. Anybody ever sells a pie? I might as well die.
She nuzzles her face against Pie's.
I don't think he meant it.
Oh, he couldn't. The pie's too wonderful and noble and great.
Great? Do you think that greatness just hatches like Mally's canaries? Someday you'll learn that greatness is only the seizing of opportunity. Clutching with your bare hands till the knuckles show white.
It's all I want for the pie. Opportunity.
She flashes Mai a crafty smile and sits on his bed. Wearing a white and green striped dress, she gazes enthusiastically into his curious eyes.
Mai, I haven't told you. That stone fence you said was as tall as Beecher's Brook. Three times this morning he sailed over it.
I ought to be whipped for putting a crackpot notion like that in your head. You'll talk and dream of it until I get sacked.
Mai, could the pie win the Grand National?
He puts two fists on his hips.
Velvet Brown, who do you think you are?
Well, I'm the owner of the pie.
And does that give you leave to go poking your head out amongst the stars, believing you could take the richest, grandest prize a horse ever won? But that's for kings, and you're just a wisp of a butcher's daughter in a coal stable late at night when you'd better to be in bed with a doll.
The pie's a king.
A king in tatters, a king without money or a jockey or a trainer, and your pa wanting to chop him up for cat's meat.
Mike, could the pie win if he had the money, the jockey and the trainer?
He could fly to the moon if he had wings.
But if he had the money and you were the trainer, would you know where to find a jockey?
I don't like the way you're all lighted up. There's something terrible you've done. I feel it.
Answer me, Mai.
Without all the other ifs, I could get a jockey. What then?
Would it be Weatherby's in London where horses rented? Would this be the letter to send? Messrs. Weatherby, Racing Commissioners, Cavendish Square, London. Dear sirs, please, I am the owner of a horse. Could you send me rules of entry for the Grand National Race? I am your obedient servant, Velvet Brown.
Mai snatches the letter from her, rips it up, then vigorously polishes a leather bridle.
Is it a proper letter to send, Mai?
You're not sending it.
But I did, last week. Here's the reply. But you won't tear this up, because Lady helped me fill it in. Name of horse, and name of sire and dam, where purchased, and what the owner's colors are.
Did they also tell you that you need 100 pounds, Tanner?
Well, we'll come to that later.
Velvet, you know what you're bringing on yourself with this craziness? To get him fit, summer and autumn into winter, you'd be riding, riding, riding. Hard going, heavy going, over fences and over ditches, over walls, till you get weary and worn to a shadow. Up early with him, day in, day out, week after week, month after month, till you destroy yourself with work. For what, Velvet?
With her lips curved in a gentle smile, Velvet glances fondly at Pai, then steps past Mai to the open barn door.
You can't answer that, can you?
It's his chance to be great. And your chance too, Mai.
My chance will come when your Pa sends me packing.
Later, Velvet sits at the table with her mother.
Did Mai put you up to this?
No, Mother, he's against it. He begged me to change my mind.
Are you sure?
Oh, it's the truth, Mother.
Velvet, a dozen times today you might have talked to me and you waited till now. Why? Because large dreams come easier when it's dark and still.
I didn't think of that, Mother.
What will you win if you win?
Money and a cup. But it's not for that. It's for the pie. It's for the glory of it for him. With half a chance, he'll prove he belongs in the history books and not in the knacker's yard.
A Grand National. Large dream for a little girl. Fetch mine.
Velvet's mouth drops open. As her mother continues to work on the shop ledger, Velvet steps hesitantly away, glances back once, then scurries to the pantry door.
Mai! Mother wants to...
Mai runs up.
Well, you've done it.
Mai strides into the dining room with Velvet at his heels, pauses for a moment, then steps to the table.
Mrs. Brown, if it's about that national business she's been touting, it's me that said it was folly. Admit it, Velvet, it's me that was against it.
The expense?
A fortune of expense. 100 pounds stander, jockey fees, money for a horse van, lodgings at Aintree. But it'd all be folly for nothing.
The horse not good enough?
The pie?
pie. It's not only the pie, ma'am, nor the money. It's a score of other things. 30 jumps, the hardest course in the world. The National, the greatest race on earth. Training him month on month, it'd just be folly for nothing.
Mrs. Brown smiles, gets up from the table, and puts her arm around Mai's shoulder.
Tell me, Mai, what's wrong with folly?
She pats his arm and heads upstairs.
Come along, though.
Mai wrinkles his brow in puzzlement, then chuckles to himself. Later, Mrs. Brown carries a glowing oil lamp into an attic cluttered with dusty old furniture, books, and housewares. Behind her, Velvet climbs up the steep stairs.
Did Mai say jockey feet?
Yes, Mother.
Doesn't he ride?
Did. Had a spill once, though.
I nearly drowned once to the Firth, but I went back to swimming the very next day.
He must have had a nasty fright, Mother.
So did I. That wears off.
Mrs. Brown sits by a trunk.
Mai had more than a spill.
She looks off in wonder, then unlocks the trunk and lifts the domed lid. Her lips curve in a reminiscent smile as she fingers her gold trophy in black, red-striped swimsuit. She moves them aside. From the bottom of the trunk, she pulls out a leather-bound scrapbook and flips to a full-page magazine clipping with sepia photos. Velvet kneels beside her.
Dan Taylor?
My trainer.
You thought a heap of him, didn't you, Mother?
There was greatness in him.
And you too, Mother. Often I just sit and wonder about you. I wonder what you're thinking. You don't think like us, Mother. You think back here.
She pats the back of her head.
I've seen you do the same. We're alike. I, too, believe that everyone should have a chance at a breathtaking piece of folly once in his life. I was 20 when they said a woman couldn't swim the Channel. You're 12. You think a horse of yours can win the Grand National. Your dream has come early. But remember, Velvet, it'll have to last you all the rest of your life.
Velvet nods gently, her cornflower blue eyes glistening below her trim crescent eyebrows. Her mother reaches deep into the trunk, pulls out a small leather pouch, and unties its strings.
Take a lap.
Velvet tautens the skirt of her dress, and her mother empties a pouch full of gold sovereigns into it.
It's your prize money for swimming the Channel.
You knew I still had it.
Velvet hangs her head.
Be truthful.
Yes, Mother.
I always hoped I'd find the right use for it. You'll have paper money for the jockey fee and expenses, but this will be for your entry money. We'll use the gold sovereigns for luck.
Oh, Mother!
Velvet throws her arms around her.
We'll win for you, Mother.
Win or lose, it's all the same. It's how you take it that counts. And knowing when to let go. Knowing when it's over and time to go on to the next thing.
The next thing?
Things come suitable to the time, Velvet. Enjoy each thing, then forget it and go on to the next. There's a time for everything. There's a time for having a horse in the Grand National, being in love, having children. Yes, even for dying. All in proper order at the proper time. Tuck the sovereigns under your pillow for tonight. Say your prayers and get some sleep.
Yes, Mother.
Teary-eyed, Velvet clasps her mother's arm.
But who's going to tell Father?
I'll do the telling. I don't think your father believes too well in the importance of folly.
Morning. Velvet watches tweed-suited Mai pack his carpet bag.
And collar for Weatherby's. Brush and comb.
She squeezes his hand.
Mai, your hands don't even tremble.
Why should they? I've been in London before.
She hands him the leather pouch.
The 100 quid?
Heavy, isn't it?
I can't complain.
There's an extra half crown in the bag. I saved it. It's for you to spend.
Better let me finish alone. We'll jabber on and the train will leave.
All right, I'll saddle the pie and see you off.
Velvet excitedly grabs a bridle and a leather English saddle off the railing. Mai watches her hurry out, then takes the pouch of prize money from his carpet bag and rolls it over in his palm, his eyes narrow in deliberation. He rushes to the doorway and checks outside. Hastily, he gathers his clothes from his bureau and stuffs them into his bag with 100 quid. Later, Mai and Velvet visit the Brown's butcher shop.
Good luck to you.
Thanks, dear man.
My lad. You can't say that your big chance didn't come to you in the village of Sewells. Going to London town with 100 golden sovereigns in your pocket. Mrs. Brown wishes you good luck. I wish you a good time.
Goodbye, Miles.
Goodbye, ma'am.
He leaves with Velvet. Mr. Brown hacks a rack of lamb.
400, 500, 600, 700.
Making calculations, Mr. Brown?
I am. Calculating how many lamb chops I must hack to make up 100 golden sovereigns. Because I'll lay my 2 years on this block if you ever see the color of your sovereigns again. Or the hide of Master Taylor this side of Doomsday. That boy crammed everything he owned into that carpet bag.
Now Velvet rides Pie alongside my speeding train. Mai waves to her out his compartment window. With the wind rushing through her hair, she smiles and waves back. Pai keeps pace at a breakneck gallop. Evening in London, the spired towers of Westminster Palace rise sharply into an indigo sky. On a dimly lit cobblestone street, Mai strolls up to a pub. Wearing a tweed suit and cap, he eyes a shapely woman with a green feather boa, then peers into the pub window. A carved wooden sign over the door reads, "The Covey." Mai heads inside, carrying his overcoat. He steps past a rowdy table, glances around the smoky pub, and takes a seat at the empty bar. A burly mustached bartender dries pint glasses with a red checkered dish towel.
Half and half.
Half and half, sir. Right you are.
Mai glances up at a sign. It's better to have loved a short man than never to have loved a tall. The bartender slides a pint down the bar.
Ah, get ready. There she goes.
Mai catches the foamy beer and sips. A short, reedy man approaches Mai with a husky fellow who dangles an unlit cigarette in his lips.
Here's you, Mr. Greenford, and a good man he used to know.
What do you want, lad?
Maybe we can do some business. I've got a mountain. I'm looking for a rider.
Gymkhana stuff? County fair?
No, Aintree.
Who are you acting for?
Owners, take it or leave it.
Mai sips his beer.
Why wouldn't a lad like you go to a place like...
Greenford lights his smoke.
Manchester to find a rider.
Mai shifts his gaze.
Why'd you mention Manchester?
Because that's where you had your spill, wasn't it, lad?
The short, reedy man smirks.
What's your game?
I'm taking these over to Weatherby's in the morning.
He means it. He's serious. Got the papers in his hand. Got the empty money in his pocket.
Yeah, get your hands off of that.
There's no need to get ratty, matey.
There's no harm in a little horseplay among horsey men, now is there? Where's the table? No sense in talking on your feet.
Later, bleary-eyed, Mai downs a shot, then chases it with a swill of beer.
Think of it sober. This Miss Brown of yours entering a horse what never run anywhere. Why, you might just as leave go down the Thames embankment and take your 100 quid and fling it right in the middle of the river.
Will they mind a fling?
What's the odds? Dropping the money in the Thames would get your name in the paper, but taking you down to Weatherby's to enter a whiskey horse will get you nothing. Because why? Because your nag ain't going to win the national.
Mr. Greenford here, he's been picking national winners all his life.
Yes.
The Reedy man pours Mai more beer.
Gentlemen, what do you suggest?
Listen with your wits. The horse what's taking the national is in the advance betting now at 40 to 1. Can you count? £4,000 for your measly 100. And all I ask is a little commission.
Mai shrugs uncertainly, then strokes his weary brow.
What could I tell him?
Tell him anything.
What could I tell him?
Tell him you lost the money. Tell him, here. Tell him you had a drink or two in the pub and a couple of touts like us begs the money. And the day after entry, you slips away, comes up to London and you lives like quality for the rest of your days. What do you say, son? What do you say?
With a white foam mustache from his beer, Mai grins at both of them, then pulls the leather pouch from his suit coat pocket and sets it in front of Greenford. The husky tout pours several coins into his palm.
Victoria stuff. Here. What's that, half a crown? You got this bag watered down?
She gave it to me to spend. Saved it. And she was glad to give it to me.
Generous owner you got.
Old lady's sweet on you, is she? Husky lad.
Mai pops to his feet, knocking his chair over.
Not old.
Mai sways on his feet.
Not old. Not sweet on me.
His heavy-lidded eyes well with tears.
Trust me.
He presses his lips matter-of-factly, nods to himself, and smiles.
Just trust me.
He tears the money pouch out of Greenford's hands, collects several coins from the table, and stuffs them in his pockets with Pye's ownership papers. Struggling to keep his balance, Mai picks up his overcoat from the fallen chair and swaggers out of the pub. Daytime in the village. Mai strolls into the butcher shop and smiles at Mrs. Brown. Her husband carries two golden pies.
Well, I see you took me at my word and had a right good time.
Here's the receipt for your money at Weatherby's.
Mrs. Brown passes it to her husband. Frowning, he studies it skeptically.
And you get £5 change.
Mai lays the bill on the desk, then steps outside into the sunshine. Mrs. Brown picks up the £5 note.
Yesterday you calculated how many lamb chops went to make 100 sovereigns.
Yes, and today I'll calculate in mutton head.
No need for too much humility, Mr. Brown.
He looks down sourly. Later, at the Browns, Mai carries his carpet bag and overcoat into his rustic stable room. He drops his things next to his bed, takes off his hat, and slumps wearily onto the bed. Velvet rides Pye into the barn, jumps down, and scurries over to Mai's bedside, beaming with anticipation.
Everything all right?
Uh-huh.
Did they take the money?
I took it.
Did you find a jockey?
He shakes his head.
Uh-huh.
But I thought you'd find a jockey, Mai.
Be grateful for what you have, Velvet. You've got the £100 safe at Weatherby's. You've got the expense money. You have the horse.
I know. I ought to be grateful, Mai. But I can't help it. I want it all quickly, because I don't want God to stop and think and wonder if I'm getting more than my share.
Look, the jockey will have to wait. I'll do what I can for you. I'll write a few letters for you to London, but that's all. You bit off a big piece of dream for yourself, Velvet, and from now on, it's your show.
But, Mai, I couldn't do it without you.
The National's no business of mine. Your pa won't stand for me chasing around with a horse.
But did you know what to do and how to train him and what the jumps are going to be like? Well, half the pie's in my heart and the other half's in yours. I swear by the pie that half, whatever he wins, is yours.
Thanks. I'll buy me a bowler hat with my half.
A castle with your half, Mai. The pie's going to win.
He glances at Velvet's wide grin, then stares up at the ceiling.
Half the sweeps. Tidy. Man could get a real start. Buy himself a livery stable in a lively little town. Drop anchor and raise some young'uns like Donald.
He shakes her hand.
All right. You dream of glory for your pie. As for me, I'll take the cash.
Later, they study a race map.
Now, they go twice around the course. That's 30 jumps in all. It's mostly a job of training him to jump and jump and keep going. But he's got heart. He can do it. The first 5 jumps are thorn fences, 4 and 5 feet high. We can teach him those on the hedges over by Meads. At the 3rd jump here, there's a ditch on the takeoff side. I can dig him one. And then there's also a guardrail.
In a field, tied to Mai's lunge rope, Pye circles toward a jump.
After it! Ah!
The gelding sails cleanly over the 4-foot-wide ditch, which has a hedge in the landing side. Later, Velvet rides Pye. She boosts his trot into a gallop and leans back in the saddle as Pye leaps the ditch. Mai snaps a whip in the air. Velvet jockeys Pye over the jump, taller in the saddle this time. Later, Pye swiftly carries Velvet across a meadow and over a 3-foot-tall hedgerow. They break to study a course map of the Grand National.
There's Beecher's. 6th jump. It's not the tallest one, but it'll be one of the meanest for him. There's a bad drop on the landing side over here. It'll look awful rough to him on the race course. But if we take him over this one often enough, why, it might not scare him so much. Go ahead now, but be careful. Don't jerk his head.
I know. I just sit still as a dummy and let him handle it. Watch.
Velvet trots up the hill away from the jump, a 4-foot shrub-grown stone wall with a shallow gully in the landing side. She turns Pye around and into a gallop. Tucking his forelegs to his chest, Pye springs over the jump. Later, Pye jumps a 4-foot-wide water hole. Midair, Velvet topples off and bounces onto her side. Mai rushes over.
Are you all right?
Velvet gets to her feet. Rubbing her rear, she shores a smile and nods.
Come on.
Mai boosts her back into the saddle.
Up you go.
On the second approach, Velvet leans forward as Pye hurdles the water hole, then slightly back as he lands. Now, falling autumn leaves float down onto the schoolhouse roof. At the front entrance, Miss Sims cheerfully greets her female students as they file into the classroom. Later, in a downpour, Velvet and Pye gallop across a clearing and jump a 3-foot stone wall. On a beach, Mai stands knee-deep in the gentle waves as Velvet trots Pye through the shallow water. The gelding's slender legs splash a light 2-beat gait. Mai waves his arms for Velvet to stop, then holds Pye by the bridle and rubs him down with handfuls of water.
Nothing like salt water for his legs. Makes muscle.
Mai pats Pye's long, thick neck, then gently slaps him into a trot. Now in the village, light snowdrifts spot the schoolhouse roof. Inside Miss Sims' classroom, Velvet gazes out the window, lost in a daydream while the other students study. A teenage girl wearing a scarf around her neck hands Miss Sims a note and curtsies.
Thank you.
Miss Sims reads the handwritten message.
Velvet?
Velvet Brown.
You're wanted home at once.
Velvet dashes to the back of the room, grabs her coat and hat, then hurries outside in her sweater. She runs down a snowy street, slips and falls. Picking up her coat and hat, she charges on. She bursts into her living room to find Edwina sitting on the floor with her head buried in her arm.
Is it Donald? It's not Mother. Edwina, what is it? What's happened? Somebody ill?
It's Ted. They sent him away to live with his aunt in Lancaster.
You mean you're sniveling for a boy? You brought me home for that?
Velvet.
She glances at Mai, his lips stumbling for words. Velvet steps nervously closer, her cheeks flushed from the cold.
The Pye?
He nods and lowers his head. Velvet dashes outside.
Sniveling for Ted! I'd better be sniveling for a dirty old hawk! I hope he dies!
In a stall, Pye lies on his side and Velvet pets him.
Pye, what's wrong? Tell me what hurts. Tell me. I'll understand.
She kneels in the hay beside him, stroking his broad cheek. Mai enters with a cast iron kettle of hot water.
Is he very bad?
Mai nods.
I'll go get a vet.
No, no vet. There isn't a good one in town. Mai, please. You can help him. He's ours, Mai.
Would you trust me, Velvet? I'm not very lucky. I might guess wrong. But would you trust me?
Yes. You won't hurt him more than need.
With glazed eyes, she watches Pye weakly lift his head up.
Go get some blankets and some whiskey and some more hot water.
Later, Mr. and Mrs. Brown sit in front of a blazing fireplace.
So tragedy stalks the house.
Pearson's Weekly came this morning. I put it on your bed.
Not going to bed yet. Atmosphere's too disturbed.
I don't hear a sound in the house.
Don't you think that Velvet will catch her death out there in the stables?
It's not to be helped. She's beside herself. You'll need your sleep, Mr. Brown.
Not at all. When tragedy stalks the house once in 10 years, I can stay up.
Mai enters the pantry, sets the kettle on the wood stove, then doffs his cap and stands in the living room doorway.
Come in, Mai.
Jacob puts his front paws on Mr. Brown's lap and wags his tail.
Down, your feet are wet.
Any change?
Mai shakes his head.
Sit down, Mai, and pour for yourself.
Thank you, Mom.
Excuse me.
He steps over Mr. Brown's ottoman.
You worried about the animal?
Mai pours himself some tea.
He's sick.
I wouldn't be surprised if you and Mrs. Brown were sick, too. Matter of a cool 100 pounds with those racing people. What are you going to do, take the carcass to London and demand a refund?
We're not thinking of the money, Mr. Brown.
Oh, not you, Mrs. Brown. You're a woman of deep feelings and faith. I mean Master Taylor's half interest in the winnings.
Mr. Brown, remember once you entered a competition for 5 shillings which the headmaster posted for spelling? Was it the love of spelling or the love of 5 shillings, Mr. Brown?
Now that was entirely different, Mrs. Brown.
It was the love of 5 shillings, Mr. Brown. Don't be ashamed of it. Sometimes even money can be a faith.
Later in the stable, Mai and Velvet kneel by Pye, who lies on his side beneath a patchwork quilt. Rosy-cheeked, Velvet wears a red tam-o-shanter, a heavy wool coat, and a scarf around her neck. She cups Pi's pointy ear in her hands to keep it warm. Mai checks Pi's weary right eye, then glances up at a map of the Grand National Racecourse on the wall. He shares a solemn gaze with Velvet. Inside, Mrs. Brown knits while her husband relaxes on the sofa.
I haven't sat up so late since Donald arrived, which, of course, was late at night.
No need to sit up, Mr. Brown. Tragedy can stalk the house without assistance.
Jacob spots Donald on the stairs.
I sleep too much.
I'll decide. Upstairs.
Is the child in the habit of coming down at this hour? You heard your mother. Back to bed.
I only fall asleep.
That is the general purport and intention.
I've been sick all night.
You haven't.
Why haven't I?
Now, don't let him start whining.
You changed my sheets in the middle of the night, and the new ones was cold.
I changed your sheets for other reasons. Now get on.
Donald yawns.
I must have been sick all night.
With tired, heavy-lidded eyes, Donald trudges back upstairs. His father lies back on the sofa for a nap. In Pi's stall, Velvet and Mai wait. Pi twitches, then perks up his head. Velvet and Mai exchange a gasp. Mai pulls a quilt off Pi's back, and the horse rolls onto his hooves and stands up. Beaming, Velvet throws her arms around Pi's strong neck. She hugs Mai, then races into the house and squeezes her mother in a joyful embrace.
Mother! Mother, he's fine. Stood up on his own legs and said thank you, as perky and cheerful as Donald.
Steady.
Mai cured him. He's on his feet. He's up.
The horse is up and you'll be down. Haven't eaten, haven't slept.
She takes off her tan.
Is it fair to impose illness on a household?
Oh, I won't be ill, Father. I'll show you. I'm quite well, like the pie. I could sit up 1,000 nights.
She notices her father's pocket watch.
I'll be late for school.
Velvet pulls on her tam, wraps her scarf around her neck, and runs out.
Are you letting her go to school, Mrs. Brown?
If that's what she wants.
Well, you think school is the place for her today?
I like the spirit that makes her want to go after sitting up all night.
She'll collapse by afternoon.
She'll be home in 30 minutes, Mr. Brown. This is Saturday and there is no school.
Now, Mai wraps protective bandages around Pi's front hooves while Velvet brushes his shiny coat.
Today we'll teach him the canal jump. That's a bad one. There's a brush fence and a sharp turn. That's the teaser, the turn. We've got to teach him not to run out. He's almost got to start turning while he's in the air. If we can teach him the canal jump, we'll have taught him plenty. Here, it's over here. I'll show you.
They look at the course map.
There's a guardrail here and a ditch 6 feet wide and a hedge 5 feet high. But the real danger is here, right at the turn. That's where they pile up. That's where they go wild. That's where things happen. We'll start him on it this morning. We'll take him on the hedge over by Tupper's.
Later.
Steady. Steady now.
Velvet careful. Jockeys Pi straight over a 4-foot hedge.
No. You can't start him straight off. You'd run him into the canal. Turn him, I told you. Turn him.
Velvet takes the jump again and reins Pi hard left on the landing.
That's good. He's well away. That's the canal turn.
Later, Velvet rides Pi up a grassy hill at a swift 4-beat gait. Behind them, a valley stretches to the sea. Sitting on a wooden rail fence, Mai pauses his stopwatch as she rides up.
Good boy. That's the fastest time yet.
Nighttime at home. Malvolia folds a set of gold and fuchsia-pink racing silks. Edwina carries a crimson-red horse blanket with the gold-embroidered initials VB past Velvet, who takes paper dolls from a box.
Look at that, Velvet. Paper horses just before the Grand National.
Well, I've been neglecting them. Somebody's been changing these all around.
Who's been at my box?
Me.
I. You too?
Mr. Ede opens the door.
Good evening, Ede. Come in.
Expected to see more excitement tonight.
There's nothing to be excited about.
When are you leaving?
5 o'clock in the morning.
Before breakfast.
Got any tips on the Grand National?
Pie.
In that case, I'll put a pound on him.
That's a pound wasted.
We can't let down the own colors. Pound to win.
Thank you, Mr. Ede. I'll put it here in the book with the other bets.
Other bets? You're the ninth one that's been here.
Mr. Jenkins bet £3.
Didn't know Mr. Jenkins had £3.
He shakes Velvet's hand.
Good luck, Velvet.
Thank you.
He heads out.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Our fool and his money are easily parted. It's bad enough to see this family wasting its money on hired horse fans and fancy jockey silks. But when I see the village of Sewells throwing good money after bad, it's enough to make me lose my faith in humanity.
I'm glad to hear you've got faith in humanity, Mr. Brown. As for me, I'd sometimes sooner put my faith in a horse.
Donald grins and carries one of Velvet's paper horse dolls over to Mai.
Tell me that one.
Bedtime, Donald.
I'm busy. We're all busy.
Donald tugs Mai over to a Windsor chair with a high-spoked back.
Tell me your horse.
One more.
Donald snuggles into Mai's lap.
All right, this was a horse called Moifa. Came from New Zealand on a big ship. Now, they sent him around the world. And finally, one day, the ship went down. And the horse swam off to an island. Now, there wasn't anything to eat on the island. So the poor frightened horse ran up and down the seashore, gazing out at the sea.
And then what?
And he cried and whimpered and neighed for help.
The horse did?
Mm-hmm. You see, there wasn't anything to eat on the island but salt grass and salt water and him used to a good stable.
Did he die?
No, he...
Yes, he did. I know he did.
Well, some fishermen saw him and fetched him. He won the Grand National that year.
He died. He died on that island. I know.
How do you know?
I was there.
You weren't. You weren't born.
I was born. I was born.
That's a story, Donald.
You weren't born. You were a star.
I wasn't a star. I was born and I was there and that horse died. He died on that salty place. And he lay down and his eyes was dead and he died. I know he did. He died. He died. He died. He died.
Hysterics. Past his bedtime.
Mrs. Brown carries Donald upstairs.
Oh, he died. He died.
You too, Velvet. Bedtime.
Bedtime now? But I just ate my supper.
Go to bed, Velvet.
She nods and stands up, holding her box of paper horse dolls.
Good night, Father.
Good night, Velvet.
She starts upstairs, then turns back.
Night.
Night.
At first light, Mai leads Pai up a ramp into a back of a boxy livestock truck, then hops down. Velvet smiles.
We're almost ready.
Velvet hugs Edwina.
Will you forgive me for what I said about the pie when he was sick?
Of course, you didn't mean it.
She kisses her.
Goodbye, Velvet.
Goodbye, Mary.
Don't forget the canary catalog from Inches.
Goodbye, Donald.
She bear hugs her little brother.
Bring me back a monkey!
Velvet hurries to the truck, steps onto the bumper, and squeezes her mother's shoulders.
You'll be proud of the pie, Mother.
I want to be proud of you.
They embrace warmly. Nearby, Mai and Mr. Brown close the ramp.
All right, push.
They lock the ramp against the side of the truck like a door. Then Mr. Brown glances warily around.
You'll understand I'm not a frivolous man, but I'd like to risk a couple of pounds. Put it on the pie for me.
Yes, sir.
And I'll not be angry if you say nothing to the missus about it. Good luck, my boy.
Mai slips the bed into his pocket. Mr. Brown straightens his scarf, and they step innocently to the back of the truck.
Father, do you mind about all this?
I'm not angry, Velvet.
She throws her arms around him.
Run along with you.
Mai gives her a hand into the truck.
All right, go on.
As the truck pulls away, Mai and Velvet wave from an open back window. The Browns jog down the driveway after the truck with Jacob at their heels. Later, in the back of the truck with Pai, Mai sleeps. Velvet's lips curve in a bubbly smile.
Mai, let me see it again. The letter.
Oh, why don't you settle back and try to sleep, Velvet? We've got a long, long trip ahead.
Oh, please.
With his eyes closed, Mai passes her a letter from his inside trench coat pocket. Her eyes fall on the bottom of the page.
Ivan Tarski. I wonder what he'll be like. It's important. Mai, do you think he's going to like the pie?
Yes, he's going to like them, all right. A jockey knows a good horse when he sees one.
Well, how do we know these clothes are going to fit him?
All jockeys are the same size, same brain, same vision, seeing the world from the height of a horse.
Velvet runs her tongue over her upper teeth. Gently biting her lip, she opens up a handkerchief from her jacket pocket, slips out her retainer, and carefully hides it in the scarf. Mai frowns at her.
Velvet?
Just this once, Mai. I've got all the rest of my life to wear them.
Mai nods and they share a smile. Velvet wraps her retainer in the handkerchief, then tucks it in her jacket pocket. Later, they drive across a field just outside the track. Parked horse trailers and livestock trucks line the grassy clearing. Velvet and Mai hop out the back of the truck, and Mai helps the driver prepare the ramp. A groom walks a strapping bay-colored racehorse past Velvet. She stares up in awe. A white blanket trimmed in red shields its arched back from the sun. Velvet moseys through a garden of yellow daffodils, admiring dozens of sinewy racehorses being walked in the field. She closes her eyes, bends to a lilac bush, and sniffs a cluster of tiny violet flowers. With a rapturous smile, she tilts her face to the sun.
Horses.
Later in a pub with Mai and a skinny man.
Count Carlo, a good horse. The great Count Carlo, they call him. He jumped like no jumper I ever see. Where is he? Dead.
What's he talking about, Mai?
Foreign horse he was supposed to ride dropped dead on him. That's bad luck, Mr. Tasky. But you've got a fine mount now. The Pie's a great horse.
This Severione believes he has passed horse. Such a little girl.
Her money's as good as anybody's.
I have not seen it yet.
Mai drops some cash on the table.
Here's your money in advance.
Ivan slips the cash into his pocket, then tosses an envelope in front of Mai.
My papers.
Mai takes them out of the envelope.
Claire's papers, Velvet. We'll take them around in the morning.
So, business is finished. Tomorrow I ride your horse. Tomorrow night I take train to Seaport.
You're a man for speed, Mr. Tasky. Don't you like England?
I must like England, too. Your food, your climate. You kill Count Carlo, it can kill me, too. Little Tasky goes home tomorrow night.
You forget that when Miss Brown leads you in the winter, you'll want to stay around for the fun. Now, Velvet?
Such a little girl. Only in England can it happen that a child brings a plow horse from the field.
Stiffening, Velvet glances sharply at Mai.
I know you must feel pretty bad now, Mr. Tasky, about having lost your mount. That was bad luck, but wait till you see the Pie. Look, finish your food and we'll go around and pay a...
Tonight? You're serious?
Why not? You can see the horse, say hello, get the feel of him.
Shake his hand, give him a visiting card, make a bow.
Mr. Tasky's right, Mai. It would be foolish. Foolish to go out there tonight. And just as foolish for you to ride him tomorrow, Mr. Tasky.
Velvet.
You may be a fine rider, Mr. Tasky, but the Pie would know your heart's not in it. He would know you don't believe in him. And he'd say to me, why did you bring me a rider who doesn't believe he can win?
What you call crazy, eh?
Mai looks from Ivan's toothy grin to Velvet.
No, what you call the truth, Mr. Tasky.
Velvet and Mai leave in haste. Later, under a midnight blue sky, Velvet sits on the back steps of the truck. Mai strolls wearily out of the darkness and takes a seat beside her.
Looked everywhere. Tried everything. Asked everybody. No jockey.
She hangs her head.
Looks like there'll be no race tomorrow for the Pie. Oh, the waste. Sickening waste of it on a scatterbrained dream. Snow, slush, mud. Mornings, nights, Sundays. Soreness of your back, the rawness of your hands and your face in the wind. Searching for weeks for a rider, and then you say, no, Mr. Tasky, thanks, goodbye.
But, Mai, that man Tasky lost the race tonight. You know that. He just didn't believe. And what good's a jockey to only riding for the fee?
He's a rider. Things happen in a race, you know.
Not with the Pie. He would know.
You know, when I take him, put him in the van, and take him home before he's had a chance to try his legs on the course.
She brightens.
Why don't you ride him, Mai?
You want to know why? I'll tell you why if you want to know.
His eyes glisten.
It's been going around in my mind all night.
No.
Yes, I'll tell you. I was a jockey. And I rode at Manchester one fine day. There was three of us going for the final jump together. And I saw a chance to win the race and I took it. It was me that did it. And there was a tangle. A tangle of reins. Jockeys. And one of them got killed. That's why I don't ride anymore, because I'm afraid. I'm all soft and yellow inside, so I don't ride. That's why I'm no good to you when you need me most.
No, Mai. It's you kept me going. You breathe the spirit into me. There's greatness in you, Mai.
There's nothing in me.
Oh, no, Mai.
She buries her head in his shoulder. Choking back tears, Mai hastens off. Later at the stables, he halters Pie.
Come on, Pie. We're going home.
Pie, draped in a yellow blanket, follows Mai out of the stall past two grooms outside.
Tough luck, old boy.
Later, under a dusky blue sky, Mai walks the lean gelding to the paddock, an octagonal 50-foot-wide arena enclosed by a single-rail fence. Moonlight spreads a dull gray hue across the short grass. Behind them, a board lists the jockeys' last names and their numbers. Mai gazes solemnly into the paddock, draws a long breath, and looks at Pai.
You're never going to have a chance to walk in that paddock. It's all my fault. Because if I wasn't a yellow coward, I'd ride you myself. But you wouldn't know me if I rode you. Say, that isn't my tailor. Because I'm always down here on the ground. Never up there on your back.
His frown slowly fades. Below the curved brim of his tweed cap, Mai's energized eyes shift in thought. He unbuckles the yellow horse blanket, lays it over the fence, then slips the lead rope into Pai's mouth like a bit. Making reins, he wraps the rope around Pai's neck and ties the end to a halter ring. A shaggy forelock hangs down between Pai's soft brown eyes. With a firm grip on the withers at the bottom of Pai's chestnut mane, Mai pulls himself onto the thoroughbred's strong back. He sits tall, adjusts his cap, and swallows hard. Clenching the reins with both hands, he goads Pai into a walk. At an opening in the fence, they enter the paddock. Pai raises his hooves in delicate, mincing steps, then settles into a trot. Moonlight shines on a deserted refreshment tent. As Pai accelerates into a gallop, Mai rocks with the rhythm of his pounding gait.
It is my tailor. I dare you to throw me.
They race around the octagonal paddock. Dust rises from Pai's churning hooves. Mai reins into a halt in the center of the ring. Gritting his teeth, Mai boots Pai into a gallop toward the fence. Pai springs over the 3-foot rail, then slows to a walk. Sitting tall, Mai gazes triumphantly across the paddock. With his lips curved in a faint smile, he glances over his shoulder at the jockey board, where I, Tasky, is listed beside number 28. The name dissolves to Mai Taylor, then back to I, Tasky.
Better take a good look at it now, Pai. Tomorrow you'll not have the chance, for you and I'll go flying around that course like the devil himself is at our heels. And up there somewhere watching it'll be the king and queen.
Later, Mai jogs back to the campground and climbs into the back of the dark horse trailer, where Velvet sleeps on a narrow bunk. He strikes a match and lights an oil lamp, spreading a warm orange glow across the cramped truck. On a hay bale, he notices an empty shoebox, then glances around and spots Pai's registration papers out of their envelope. He pulls down Velvet's blanket to find her sound asleep in the satiny pink and yellow racing silks. Her long hair is hidden beneath the matching helmet.
What in the name of all that's crazy are you doing?
Isn't it perfect?
Perfect for what?
Oh, my, it's a wonderful idea. You'll have to cut my hair, but the clothes are just right. And the description on the clearance paper fits.
Velvet, the Grand National is no game for a little girl.
But they'll never know I'm a girl. If you cut my hair, I'll be exactly right.
You'll get your stupid, silly little neck exactly broke.
The Pie will take care of me. My, please don't be angry. You know the Pie would burst his heart for me.
Some 40 horses and riders ready to trample you over. I'll not let you ride, Velvet. I won't let you do it.
But he'll be an enchanted horse with invisible wings to take him over every jump if I ride him.
Gazing into Velvet's electric eyes, Mai's face softens.
Velvet, I'm going to ask you a question now, and I want you to think it over before you answer me. Suppose I told you now that I found a rider.
She draws a quick breath, then fixes a sullen stare on the floor.
I should still want to ride myself.
His smile falters.
Mai, I know you're angry, but you'll understand. If you ever rode a horse again, you'd want to win. That's how I feel.
So now it's the glory of winning you want for yourself, is that it?
She nods.
You want to ride your race, take your risks and win. You want to win over them all in sight of the world. Velvet Brown before the king and queen, is that it?
Pressing her lips in a smile, she nods again. Mai gets up, breathes a deep sigh, and gazes out the window.
Well, perhaps you're right. Perhaps that's what I'd want if I'd ever ride again. Someday I may get the chance.
He looks at her with soft brown eyes.
All right. You're right.
She hugs him.
Oh, my, I knew you'd see. Oh, thank you, Mai.
There's lots we have to do. You've got to be Ivan Tesk.
I've been all over it. The description will be all right. Eyes blue, hair brown. You'll have to cut my hair. Here. If I won't mind you using his, this is on my name.
Velvet takes off her helmet, letting her curly brown hair fall on her shoulders.
Go ahead, Mai. Cut it quite short at the back.
Velvet sits on a crate while Mai draws the shades.
I wish your mother were here.
She is here. She's inside me.
Mai snips foot-long handfuls of hair.
Velvet, you'll be disqualified at the end when they find out you're a girl. You'll have to forfeit the prize money, and maybe we'll send you to prison for fraud. But if there's any trouble, you tell them it was me that did it, you understand? It was me that put you up to it. It was my idea. I made you do it.
There won't be any trouble, Mai.
Well, if you're going to ride, there's a lot of tricks of the race you'll have to learn. Don't worry about the start. Get off as fast as you can and then jump sure and clean.
Yes, Mai.
And you go twice around the course. That's 30 jumps in all.
Yes, Mai.
I might as well start at the beginning. The first jump is just a plain hedge
Mai,
jump, and then...
Mai, don't tell me anymore.
Well, you've got to know the order of the jumps and the tricks of the race. Mai, there's a lot to know.
It's no use. Everyone riding out there tomorrow will know more than I do. It's no use, Mai.
Do you think a race like this is won by luck?
No. By knowing the Pie can win and telling him so.
Mai meets her resolute gaze, then sighs and trims her hair above her collar. Morning. The red, white, and blue Union Jack ruffles in a breeze high above the oval racetrack. Thousands of spectators fill the sloping grandstands. The jockey board, listing the riders' numbers, first initials, and last names, draws a crowd. In the infield, bettors flock to the odds boards of official bookmakers.
Under the derby, number 22. £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2, £2,
On an outsider, who is the longest off?
The power, 100 to 1.
I take a pounder.
Watch all, lady. The power, 100 pounds to 1.
Mai briskly crosses the crowded paddock, carrying a leather jumping saddle and wearing an armband with the number 28. Velvet, dressed in her gold and fuchsia racing silks, jogs to keep up. They enter the men's clubhouse, where bare-chested jockeys change into their colorful silks. Velvet gapes.
Keep your mouth shut and your eyes down.
She fixes her wide-eyed stare on the floor and follows Mai past the shirtless riders to a bench.
Sit down there.
Down. Velvet glimpses a slight, dark-eyed jockey eyeing her suspiciously, then ducks behind a hanging coat.
My, they're staring. They're whispering.
Let them whisper.
Velvet makes eye contact again, and the slight, bare-chested jockey strides over to Mai with his trainer.
I've seen you somewhere. New Market last year? I've been about.
I thought I knew you.
He glances at Velvet.
Pretty young, ain't he?
Latvian, they teach them pretty young over there. You know, like for the Russian ballet.
Oh. Going to waltz over the course, matey?
Better save your breath. He doesn't speak English.
What's his horse?
The Pie.
Never heard of him. Where's he been running? The merry-go-downs.
Ah, come on, Beasley. Gonna ride the National in the Steel for England, too.
Mai heaves a relieved sigh as they leave. Later, in the weighing room, a jockey in rose racing silk sits on a chair scale with his saddle. The clerk of scales checks his weight.
10-10.
10-10.
Next in line, Velvet watches jockey number 26 sit on the scale.
Wait.
10-7.
10-7.
Mai glances at Velvet.
They're going to ask you your weight, and then they're going to put you in the chair.
I thought he didn't understand English.
Well, he's got to learn sometime, hasn't he?
All right, off you go.
Mai points as Velvet shuffles toward the scale.
Chair.
Sit down. Come on.
The clerk eyes Velvet as she sits.
Wait.
10 even. He doesn't speak English. Latvian lad. Job this. You'd think he'd never seen a scale before.
9, 13, and 11.
The clerk adds 2 weights to Velvet's saddle.
11.
Penny piece and a half.
Penny piece and a half.
All right. Come on.
Velvet looks perplexed.
Dull of comprehension.
The clerk's assistant taps her on the shoulder and points
Wait.
To the door.
Ten, four.
Velvet gets up and meets Mai outside.
I'm going over and saddle the pie now, and I'll meet you in the center over by the hedge.
Oh, where?
Over in the middle of the paddock, and keep your mouth shut. Don't talk to anybody, please.
Mai takes the saddle from her. Tightly gripping her leather riding crop, Velvet watches him leave, then gathers herself into a tall stance and strides through the adult crowd. She wears baggy snow-white breeches, tucked into high leather boots, and her pink satin racing shirt with yellow long sleeves. Her closely cropped hair peeks out from her brightly colored helmet. Squeezing through the dense crowd, she ducks under a rail into the paddock and strides briskly to a hedge in the center. Petite jockeys and their grooms prepare their mounts. The muscular racehorses range in color from jet black to chestnut brown. Beneath their thin leather saddles, the horses wear white number cloths. She watches Mai lead her horse into the paddock. Pai wears his mane in neat 3-inch braids and the crimson blanket initialed VB. Velvet snuggles her face against Pai's soft white muzzle and pats his neck. He wears a pink and yellow bow in the brow band of his bridle. Mai removes the crimson blanket from his saddle. He holds Pai steady while Velvet gathers the reins in her left hand. Reaching over her head, she grabs the saddle's cantle, and Mai boosts her into her seat.
Up you go.
She slips her boots into the slim iron stirrups. Mai takes the lead rope and walks Pai in a procession of mounts. The tall, sinewy horses file out of the paddock through an admiring crowd. Velvet sits straight-backed on Pai, her eyes sober and steady. In a press box, a thinly mustached announcer, wearing a trench coat and fedora, looks down at the track.
Once again, the Grand National has brought contestants and spectators from all the corners of the world. We have perfect weather, too, for the most hazardous of all races. There are 32 entries ready for a grueling 4.5 miles over 30 hair-raising jumps. And operating past the stands. Yes, there they are. A handsome show of the best jumpers in the world gathered here from Ireland, France, America, Spain, India, and half a dozen other countries. There's Blue Tommy, the favorite, number 4th in line. Ebony Star, number 9, with Martin Trilby up. Number 3, Miracle Lad, ridden by Cudder Hay. Number 17, Tantibus. There's a good long-odds chance.
In the upper tier of the grandstand, well-dressed ladies and gentlemen peer through binoculars as the riders parade across the paddock toward the starting gate. The women wear fur coats with soft wool caps, while the men sport tweed overcoats, fedoras, and bowler hats. Below them, spectators line a fence which surrounds the track. Mai leads Velvet and Pai in front of the grandstands.
Well, this is where I leave you.
Mai, I can't.
You beat them all. Think of your mom.
Velvet trots off on Pai. With his head held high, the chestnut gelding prances onto the track, then glides into a canter and heads toward the starting line with the other mounts. Mai jogs along the outside fence, craning his neck to keep an eye on Velvet. A black-coated bobby pushes him through a gate into the crowd. Mai shoves his way to the front row and positions himself next to a 6-foot-tall man who wears a crisp navy blue overcoat, white gloves, and a bowler hat, and peers through binoculars. At the post, the riders begin to line up side by side behind the starting gate. Several horses jib nervously. A ruddy-faced official stands on a platform and oversees the formation.
All right, gentlemen. Let's get this done as quickly as possible. No rushing now. Steady, number 13. No hurry. You're not going in a sprint, you know. This is almost a 5-mile race.
Velvet noses Pai between two fidgety mounts.
Doesn't get dark till 6 o'clock, you know. Get him in!
On the sideline, Mai watches, biting his lip.
The 14 back. Back, that's it. Bring up 31! Dooley, can't you keep that Irish horse quiet? You're in England now.
The final horses join the starting row.
Make it easy, number 8. Steady now. Steady.
Drawing a breath, Velvet pats Pai. The crowd stills. Photographers peering through box cameras steady themselves. On the platform, the ruddy-faced official yanks the gate lever. The riders take off. Number 9 balks at the line. In the grandstand, spectators crane their necks to watch the racers round the clubhouse turn. At the fence, Mai clenches a rail, his eyes glued to the track.
Steady, boy.
In the middle of the pack, Velvet jockeys Pie over the first 3-foot-tall hedge jump. Up ahead, riders 4 and 12 battle for the lead. Ebony Star, a jet-black steed, gains ground on the second hedge jump. On the sidelines, two intense spectators box Mai out of the first row, and he disappears into the crowd. Mai jumps up to see over their shoulders. On the third jump, a horse clips his forelegs on the hedge and falls. His jockey sprawls onto the track, and the crowd leaps to its feet. Mai shoves his way up front.
Where are they?
Good jump now. Persiflage is down.
The white-gloved gentleman next to Mai peers through binoculars as the mounts sail over the fifth jump, their hind legs brushing the pine branches.
Approaching Beecher's Brook.
Velvet leans forward out of her saddle.
It's Beecher's Pie. Here comes Beecher's. Nothing to be frightened about. Just like the hedge at Eve Meadow.
14th, Pie soars over the hedge and easily clears the deep drop in the landing side. At the fence, Mai tugs his neighbor's arm.
What's happening at Beecher's? Who's down?
The slightest idea. Can't see a thing.
In the press box, the announcer watches the race through binoculars.
We're going over the 7th. I shall now turn you over to Tom Foley at the canal turn.
This is Foley at the canal turn. Here they come. Blue Tommy, Faraday, Ebony Star, Folsom, Cantabus.
The lead riders jump the hedge, then rein hard left. Behind them, a jockey tumbles off his mount.
Wait, something's wrong. Moon Ray and Jumping Star are down. Others are refusing. They're running out.
What's happened?
Something wrong at the canal turn.
What's wrong at the turn? Who's fallen? Who's down?
Don't know. Can't see a thing.
As the horses barrel down a straightaway, turf flies from their churning hooves. Mai shakes his neighbor.
The Pie get past the canal turn. Where's the Pie?
The who?
The Pie!
In the top 10, Velvet and Pie clear a straightaway jump. Behind them, two mounts fumble the hedge, tossing their jockeys out of the saddle. Racing around a bend, Velvet hugs the inside rail. Mai's white-gloved neighbor peers through binoculars.
They're approaching the 13th jump. Blue Tommy's in the lead.
Forward in her saddle, Velvet glimpses a passing rider to her left. With a dirt-smudged face, she locks her eyes on the next jump, a 5-foot-tall hedge with a 5-foot-wide ditch on the landing side. Pie sails over it.
Approaching the water jump. The favorite Blue Tommy's still in the lead. Ebony Star's in second place. Here they come. Oh, it's a beautiful sight as they soar over the pink water.
Mai clenches a fist.
Come on, Pie!
Pie leaps the 6-foot-wide jump. Mai beams.
She made it! Taken like a jump champion! That's the girl!
Well done, you know.
That's the girl, Velvet!
Ebony Star,
I
hang
think.
On!
Starting around again, the last lap. Blue Tommy's still in the lead, Ebony Star is second. Yugatha's losing ground, they're not as fresh as they were, they're tiring. It's a long, hard race.
Come on, Pie!
I don't know if you're interested, but my horse Ebony Star's doing jolly well.
Come on, Pie!
I hope it wins, I've got 50 quid on
Velvet!
On a straightaway hedge jump, a jockey tumbles off his horse. The crowd springs up. Ebony Star gallops into the lead. At the rear of the pack, Pie jumps a hedge, then picks up his pace on the straightaway and gains ground over the next hedge. As Velvet challenges number 30 for position, she exchanges a quick glance with the jockey. Spread out across the grass track, the 6 lead riders simultaneously jump a hedge. Velvet follows closely. Behind her, a bay mount barrels into the hedge.
It's Blue Tommy, the favorite. He's down. Blue Tommy's out. He's out.
That leaves my horse, Ebony Star, in the lead. Jolly good, what?
Well, where's 28? Where's the Pie? Where's 28?
You know, somewhere out there, I don't know.
The riders take a jump with a 3-foot-wide ditch on the takeoff side. Two more jockeys get tossed. In the middle of the pack, Pie bounds over the next hedge, then barrels past number 9 and explodes down a straightaway. Mai's neighbor watches through binoculars.
Beecher's Brook again.
3 mounts tumble into the ditch on the landing side, while several others stop short. Through binoculars, the announcer watches fallen jockeys hobble off the track.
Bad spill at Beecher's. They're piling up. 4, 5, no, 6 of them. Others refusing. Beecher's took a toll today.
Who's over? Who's over Beecher's? Where's 28?
Pie has fallen behind the lead 8.
Ebony Star's over. Doing well. Keep it up, boy. Keep it up.
Where's the Pie? Where's 28?
I don't know.
Has she fallen?
Mai snatches the binoculars away. He takes them back.
Sorry.
Over the next jump, numbers 9, 10, and 12 break into the lead. Announcer Tom Foley peers through binoculars.
Here they come again to the canal turn. With Blue Tommy out of the race, it's Ebony Star, Ragaway, Silverpuff, Cantabus.
The lead four clear the hedge, then bank hard left around the canal turn. In the top ten, Velvet and Pie swing around the bend. Over the next hedge, Velvet pulls into fifth as another rider falls. The betting crowd fidgets. Ebony Star cruises over the next hedge. 50 yards back, Pie makes a clean jump. Number 25 crashes hard, and the medical team rushes to the staggering jockey. Up ahead, Velvet bears into the rail around a turn, gaining on the leaders.
Ebony Star, Tantibus. Wait, there's a horse coming up on the far side. He's coming up fast. I can't quite see who it is. It's number 28. 28, it's the Pie, 100 to 1 shot. The Pie in fifth place.
Mai grits his teeth and squints to see. His neighbor watches Pie sail over the next jump in good position and taps Mai's shoulder.
I say, old boy, what was that number you were interested in?
28, 28.
Still out, just saw him take the jump.
Doing jolly well in fourth place.
What?
Passing on the outside, Velvet challenges for third.
Ebony Star is still leading with Tantibus second, Faithful Lad, and the Pie are neck and neck in third place.
Come on, Velvet! Hang on, Velvet! Come on, Pie!
Ebony Star leads over the next hedge. Pie jumps and bolts into third, a length behind Tantibus.
And approaching the 30th, the last jump. It's Ebony Star, Tantibus, the Pie.
Pie jumps third over the next hedge, then explodes past Tantibus and challenges Ebony Star for the lead. Leaning forward out of her saddle, Velvet holds Pie in a short rein. His powerful back rocks beneath her. They gallop neck and neck with Ebony Star. Sweat forms on Pie's thrusting shoulders as he noses into the lead, then tears across the finish line one length in front of Ebony Star. On the sidelines, Mai rejoicingly shakes his neighbor. As Pie gallops toward the winning post, Velvet's eyes drift close. She faints out of the saddle and bounces across the grass. Mai leaps the fence. An emergency medical team rushes onto the track with a stretcher. Mai pushes through a gathering crowd to Velvet, who lies unconscious on her side.
Is he badly hurt?
Concerned spectators spill onto the track as the medical team carries Velvet away on a stretcher. At the scoreboard, an official hangs number 28 in first place and number 9 in second. Meanwhile, a reporter runs into the press box.
Pie won.
The Pie won the Grand National.
The Pie. Are you the Grand National? Oui.
I'll repeat that. Just as the Pie passed the post, the rider slid to the ground. This is an infraction of the rules, and unless I'm much mistaken, an objection will be lodged.
A reporter glimpses the red flag being raised on the track.
Wait, something's wrong.
The announcer peers through binoculars.
Objection flag is up. Here it is. Rule 144 states that the winning jockey must not dismount before he reaches the enclosure. The question now is whether the objection will be sustained.
Officials form a barrier against the pressing crowd as the medical team carries Velvet toward the first aid building. Unconscious, she lies on her back with a blanket over her legs. Mai follows closely. Two bobbies hold back the crowd as the med team carries Velvet inside. In an exam room, a doctor with thinning, slick brown hair and a thick mustache unbuttons Velvet's pink racing shirt. A stiff, stern-faced nurse watches. The doctor opens Velvet's blouse, then exchanges a perplexed look with his nurse. He looks more closely through his pince-nez, then gapes.
Put your screens round.
The nurse rolls a curtain over while the doctor pops his head outside.
Constable, run for one of the stewards, quickly.
Very good, sir.
Is she all right, sir?
She only fainted, exhausted.
Mai smiles and leaves.
She? What do you know about her? Hi!
Now in the press box.
Urgent bulletin. Astounding rumors circulating track. Is winning jockey a girl? You're checking.
I know it seems absurd, but the rumor's gaining credence.
A runner delivers a message to a steward.
Excuse me, sir.
The tall, distinguished steward moves his lips as he reads the note and furrows his brow. Sinking into a seat, he hands the message back to the runner.
Read it.
Yes, the head steward reports for your information that the course doctor finds the winning jockey is an adolescent female.
Now the doctor sternly eyes a reporter.
I'm a doctor, sir, and believe me, that's a girl.
In the press box.
A girl, ladies and gentlemen. A bit of a girl clutching the neck of a bandy-legged outsider streaked across the line to win the greatest race in turfdom. A girl wins the Grand National.
A green flag is raised and a scoreboard official moves number 9 into first place.
The objection has been sustained. The Pie is disqualified. Ebony Star wins, Tantibus second, Faithful Lad third.
In the infield, bettors crowd around the bookies, waving their receipts. Outside the first aid building, thousands wait. Now, newspapers roll off the presses, and we see a montage of front page headlines. The Evening Express, Girl Wins Grand National. The Evening News, Girl Best Jockey. The News Chronicle, Girl Winner Disqualified. The Daily Mail, Velvet Brown Rides Grand National. The Evening Standard, Read About Velvet Brown, Our National Velvet. Nighttime. Velvet steps out of the first aid building behind Mai and several bobbies. Two gentlemen in black bowler hats hoist Velvet onto their shoulders high above the crowd. As the gentlemen carry Velvet to Pie's truck, Mai helps clear a path, then climbs up next to her and puts an arm around her shoulder. The truck pulls away and Velvet shares a wave with her adoring fans. Daytime in the village. A sign hangs in the window of the Brown's butcher shop, home for good reason. As Velvet's truck rolls into town, she and Mai wave to the enthusiastic villagers jogging after them. Later, the truck turns down the Brown Drive, followed by a stream of townspeople. Edwina, Malvolia, and Donald wait at the front gate. Beaming, Velvet hops out of the truck, throws her arms around her father, and then tightly hugs her mother.
Mother, we won.
Velvet's blue eyes sparkle. Her mother takes off her daughter's tam to caress her closely cropped hair.
Were we the best in the world, Mother?
Mrs. Brown nods with a tight-lipped smile.
Yes, dear. The best in the world.
She hugs Velvet. Then they head inside with Edwina and Malvolia. In the truck, Mr. Brown smiles at the crowd.
I say, Brown, what's the bow tie for?
Lord Derby wears one just like it. He's got a couple of champion race horses, too.
And has he got a daughter who's going to prison for fraud?
Perhaps you'll be surprised to learn there won't be any charges. Englishmen treat their heroes better. They were satisfied to disqualify Velvet and the horse.
Huh. And made her forfeit all the money.
Would you expect them to be both forgiving and generous?
Nearby, two reporters interview young Donald.
Tell us more about your sister Velvet. When she was a little girl.
Donald sits on a wooden rail fence.
Sometimes she doesn't wash her neck.
Yes, well, tell us something nice.
Yesterday I caught a stinking ant. I ate it.
What?
What?
The men exchange a disgusted glance.
It said I could eat it. Take my picture.
All right.
The gray-haired reporter unfolds the leather bellows of his cubicle camera, inserts a slide of film, and peers down into the viewfinder. He focuses on Donald's freckled face.
Smile.
Donald grins broadly.
I see you've lost a tooth.
Uh-huh. I swallowed it in my soot pudding.
He wears the tooth on a string around his neck.
See?
I thought you said you'd swallow.
Oh.
Later, at the kitchen table, Mr. Brown sifts through a stack of papers.
And now about these telegrams. Decisions must be made. Cablegrams, too, it's become an international matter. Offers for Velvet and the horse, the cinema, the American wireless, the music halls. Our daughter's famous.
Famous.
There's fortunes of money in this.
Are we in need of money, Mr. Brown?
Am I to understand you've taken to despising money, Mrs. Brown? Have I ever argued a man need worship it, but then again need he despise it?
Is making too much money too quick?
Would you have a man make too little too slow?
We could let Velvet decide.
Let a child make such an important decision?
It's in her to do the right.
Ah, you'd sway the child.
Put it to her yourself, Mr. Brown. Velvet?
Yes, Mother?
Would you come down a minute?
Velvet steps downstairs, her short brown hair neatly combed.
You want me, Mother?
Now then, Velvet, it seems you're famous. All this excitement at Aintree. You liked it, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
Well, there's going to be more of it.
More? Oh.
Wouldn't you like to go to America and act in the cinema?
You mean leave here? Leave school and Donald and everybody? And Maya and the pie?
Oh, they'd take the pie along. They want him, too.
Velvet smiles.
Might be fun for us to go and see me doing things in the pictures. Donald would love it. But the pie, he wouldn't understand. Oh, no, he's better here, safe in the fields.
What's the good of that? You didn't run the National alone. They want the horse, too.
To stare at? Do they want me to pretend he's a human and knows how to be funny? Is that it, Mother?
Is your father talking to you, Velvet?
Is that it, Father?
If a horse and rider does something that's never been done before, is it strange or wicked for people to want to stare? Or newspapers to want to write?
But I can't drag him about for people to stare at. If you could see what he did for me, he burst himself for me. When I asked him, he burst himself more. And when I asked him again, he doubled it.
And would it burst your own foolish heart to stare at an account of £5,000 in a solid bank?
As she looks up at her father, tears spill from her clear crescent eyes.
I can't help it, Father. I'd sooner have that horse happy than go to heaven.
He draws a deep breath.
Run along now, Velvet, and change your dress.
She gazes up at her father with a long face.
Well, your mother says to run along, so it's all right. It's all right.
Hanging her head, she shuffles toward the stairs.
Your braces, Velvet.
Velvet pauses on the steps, her eyes shifting nervously, then pulls her handkerchief from the breast pocket of her suit jacket. With his jaw firmly set, Mr. Brown stares at the ceiling. Velvet unwraps her retainer, slips it into her mouth, flashes her mother a tart, metallic smile, then heads upstairs. Her father crumples the telegrams into a ball, strides over to the fireplace, and tosses the papers into the flames. He struts back over to his wife.
Now, Mrs. Brown, I put it to you calmly. Is that a good reason for throwing away a fortune? Unwilling for people to stare at a horse?
That'll be a dispute to the end of time, Mr. Brown, whether it's better to do the right thing for the wrong reason or the wrong thing for the right reason.
Now you...
His eyes bulge. Clenching his lips in frustration, he strides out of the house. His wife sips her tea. In the afternoon sun, Mr. Brown moseys across the driveway with his hands stuffed into his pockets. On the other side of a stone wall, furrowed farmland rolls into the distance. He strolls into the barn and swings open the stable room door to find Mai tying his canvas knapsack.
Packing? I thought to find you unpacking.
I'm going. I'm leaving, Mr. Brown.
Leaving? Why? Where?
Nowhere special.
You're not taking to the empty roads again?
They're enough if they belong to you. My pa gave me every road in the kingdom, and now I'm ready to look them over. I'll be back one day.
Don't understand you. And then again, perhaps I do. Perhaps you're right, Mai.
Mai smiles up at him.
You know, that's the first time you've ever called me Mai. It's always been my boy or me lad, but never my name, as if I didn't have one.
I get your meaning, Mai, but there's character to be considered when a man takes a stranger under his roof.
Rightly so.
Because there was a certain watchful sharpness about you. But I was wrong, and I'm sorry.
No, you were right. I was waiting for my big chance, waiting to find out how I could best use you.
Oh, I don't blame you. These days, a lad must look ahead. I'm in something different. To be frank with you, I thought you'd steal that 100 sovereigns.
I nearly did.
Wearing his knapsack, Mai grins, then steps over to Pai's stall. He strokes the gelding's long neck and soft pink muzzle.
Goodbye, Pai.
He scratches Miss Ada's chin, then strolls outside.
You did, huh? Well, why didn't you steal them? What kept you from it?
I don't know. Perhaps it was the village of Sewell's. Or the pie, Miss Ada in her stall. Maybe it was Donald, Mrs. Brown. Perhaps it was Velvet, I don't know. Maybe someday I'll know. If I was a sheep, you could quarter and search me.
Did you say goodbye to Velvet? Does she know you're going?
I told her someday I'd be leaving. Mr. Brown, I don't like goodbyes. Would you say goodbye to Velvet for me?
Mr. Brown nods.
Would you say goodbye to Jacob and Donald? Mrs. Brown? Mrs. Brown, she's a fine woman. I don't have to tell you that. There's nothing better I'd like than to go away with her thinking well of me.
She does.
Teary-eyed, Mai smiles and shakes Mr. Brown's hand.
I
Mai steps out the front gate.
God bless.
Mr. Brown watches Mai stride down the road and pass under the thick, outstretched limbs of a spreading tree. Shaggy-coated Jacob sidles up to Mr. Brown, sits, and paws his leg. Mr. Brown glances down, then pulls a pipe from the pocket of his tweed three-piece suit and pops it in his mouth.
Jacob, how can there be so many currants in such a little puddle?
Velvet hurries out the back door wearing a bright red sweater, a plaid knee-length pleated skirt, knee socks pulled up, and a pair of loafers.
Mai!
She jogs into the barn.
Mai! Mai!
Velvet gazes into the stable room.
Mai!
She slowly steps inside and glances around.
Mai!
She notices the bureau drawer, half open and empty, then looks at the bare wall behind the door. Her eyes widen. She dashes to the house.
Mother! Mother!
She bursts inside. Her parents gaze out the front window.
Mother! He's gone! Mai's gone!
I know, Velvet. Sit down.
Gazing at the floor, Velvet takes a seat beside her mother on the window bench.
Remember the night we talked in the attic? Remember how we said things come suitable to the time, all in proper order?
Velvet nods.
Tonight I was proud of you. When we asked you about the telegrams, you knew that the race was over and it was time to go on to the next thing. Would you not allow the same for Mai Taylor? It's time for him to leave Velvet and make his way in the world. But would you say, don't go, Mai, because I'll be unhappy?
Velvet shakes her head.
The world's opened up for him again, Velvet. He'd shut himself away from it before, he was angry with it. But that's over. I think he'll come back.
That's what he said, Mother. He said, only way to come back is to go. But, Mother, we've never told him what he asked, what he wanted to know. His father. Remember, Mother, how he wouldn't tell him because it wasn't the right time? Now shouldn't he know, Mother?
He deserves to. He's earned it.
Let me tell him, Mother. He can't be far up the road. The pie could find him. Please, Father.
He nods softly. With glistening eyes, she embraces him, then dashes out the back door. Mr. Brown points his smoking pipe after her and glances at his wife.
That child's more yours than all the rest, Araminte. That child's got something.
Sometimes you haven't known how to value it.
I knew how to value you once, Araminte. Didn't I?
Yes, you did, Herbert. Although that might have been the bubble and squeak of the channel swim.
Oh, you know it wasn't. Perhaps I lost my head a bit about those telegrams. It's like the sweepstakes you read about that break up the home. But we're not going to let all this to-do break up our home, are we?
You always was a nice chap, Herbert. Nothing's going to break up this home, not even if you do lose your head. It'll be easier if you keep it.
You see that I do. You know, the way I act sometimes, I feel I belong in Donald's bottle.
Carn! No room!
Donald heads upstairs. His parents look out the window to see Velvet gallop past on Pie. She leans forward in the saddle as she races down a tree-shaded lane. On the road up ahead, Mai strolls under a blue sky with dusky pink clouds. The surrounding lush green meadows roll downhill. Velvet gallops up behind him. At the top of the rise, he turns around and waits for her. Fade to black. A title appears, The End, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. A title card to families and friends of servicemen and women. Pictures exhibited in this theater are given to the armed forces for showing in combat areas around the world. War Activities Committee Motion Picture Industry.